this is David Chandler. My participation tonight is because I knew that Craig was going to be talking about me, so I wanted to be here to be able to respond.
Okay, welcome,
no
David.
Problem.
Okay, so the recording has started, and Craig, you want to call the roll?
Sure.
Wait. I'm sorry. This is the 9/11 Truth and Other Deep State Crimes teleconference for the 27th of February, 2019. Welcome, everybody. Okay, great. Sorry. Go ahead and please call the roll.
Okay. I have so far Bonnie Faulkner, Barry Zwicker, Sherry Aspen, Ann Hendricks, Marie Spike, Ken Freeland, Chuck Smith, Kat McGuire, Barbara Honegger, Peter Ketchum, David Cole, David Chandler, John O'Malley, Sheila Casey, Cheryl Curtis, Carl Golliman, Mike Cook, Dwayne Dietz, Roger Borys, and Marty Hopper. Did I miss anyone?
James
Hufford.
Dan Hennen is also here on the same phone as I am.
James Hufford. What was the other one?
Dan Hennen.
Dan
Hi,
Hennen.
Everybody. This is Fran Schur. I'm on the same phone as David right now. David Chandler.
Oh. Hi, Fran.
I'm just in
Welcome.
The same room with him.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
So we have two entries for Gilad Atzmon, and I'm assuming one of those is James and one is Dan, maybe? Since they're not coming up under their own number?
Dan's coming up.
Oh, he is. Oh, yeah, he is. Okay. So...
So is James.
Okay. So we have two Gilad Atzmons, and I don't think he's on at all.
Okay. Is anyone here on Skype? Anyone calling in on Skype?
I am. This is Sherry in San Diego. I'm on Skype.
Okay. It's probably Sherry. One is one of them. Sherry, could you press *6 so we can see which one's you?
Certainly. Let's see. *6.
Okay. Can you see which one's her, Cheryl?
No, it doesn't.
I see. She's one of the two.
Okay. Well, would you mark? Would you edit her to Sherry, please?
Yeah.
Oh, I see it. Okay. Got it.
Okay, you can unstar if you want. Uncheck if you want, Cheryl.
Okay.
Okay, so we need to know who the other person is that's calling in on Skype. We have one other Skype caller. Well, let's see.
We can always, I guess, just delete it, right?
Yep. We'll have to let that person go if they don't want to identify themselves, and then they can call back and identify themselves. Okay, so last chance, if you're calling in on Skype, identify yourself. Otherwise, we're going to have to let you go. Okay, see you later. All right, so anybody who has not been mentioned by Craig in the roll call, please announce yourself. Otherwise, we'll proceed with the address agenda. I'm sorry, with the minutes approval. Okay, so approval of minutes from the previous teleconference is circulated by Craig and myself in the draft agenda. Any amendments to the minutes as revised? Craig sent a revised version, so we're using those for reference. Well, hearing none, then we'll take the minutes for approved and move on to tonight's agenda as circulated in the draft agenda. Any amendments to the agenda? Anybody want to amend the agenda?
Okay. Ken, just there's this Gilad Atzmon is back on. And if someone just joined us and is on Skype, could you just...
This is James Hufford. I just joined you. I was dumped. I'm not on Skype.
I see your name here, though, so there must be somebody else.
Yeah, we've already got you, James, on a call. You're a 393 number, right, James?
Right.
Yeah, so it's somebody else.
I just joined, too. I'm Greg Flynn.
Oh, okay, thank you,
no,
Greg.
No, but we have you there also. Your name is showing up, Greg.
So. Okay.
All right, well, we need to know who just called back in on Skype. Otherwise, we're going to have to let you go again. We don't want to have to keep going through this, so please identify yourself if you just called in on Skype.
Well, I was the one that was dumped when you said you were dumping the person on Skype, but I'm not on Skype.
Well, wait a minute. 1 minute and 17 seconds, and the Gilad Atzmon, where do you see the Gilad Atzmon? I don't see the Gilad Atzmon.
It's below, it's on the second page?
Uh-uh.
Below
not
Dwayne.
Anymore. No?
I'm seeing it.
I'm still seeing it.
Really?
Yep. Right under Dwayne's name.
Well, why don't we dump it again and we'll just...
Go ahead. I'm not seeing it.
Oh, maybe because you... All right, let me... Okay, now it's gone. Okay.
Okay. All right, we'll keep an eye out for that. So let's proceed then. Are there any amendments to tonight's agenda?
I thought there was an amendment because we're going to have a speaker. David Chandler's going to speak. That kind of amends it.
Well, there needs to be a proposal for that amendment if somebody would like to do that. Otherwise,
I'll make a proposal for it.
I don't think that's necessary. We'll have commentary and questions and answers after.
Well, but you
I think if I'm addressing directly, I need to respond directly.
Yeah, so if she's asking for a direct response, then that's different from normal comments. So that would be an amendment to the agenda. So I understand that the amendment has been proposed by, who was it that made that proposal?
Sherry Atzmon. I think it's fair that we do that. Yes.
Okay. This is Sheila Casey. I wanted to say I was the one who just got...
Out of order. Oh, you were. Okay. So Sheila...
I was just got dumped, but I'm not on Skype.
Okay. Can we fill her in for...
I'll catch her. Yep, I'll do that.
Okay. how are you calling in, Sheila, by the way?
Landline.
Landline? Okay. Okay. So where were we? Okay, so Sherry has proposed that time be allotted for a direct response from David to his presentation.
I think I should have equal time.
Okay, it's suggested for equal time. So that's the proposal. The proposal is that David be given equal time to respond to Craig's presentation. Is there any objection to allowing equal time for David to respond to Craig's proposal?
This is Cheryl.
Yes.
I object to that. Yep. I think this is Craig's presentation. If David wants to make a few comments in the Q&A, I think that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay,
but
so the...
Wait, hang on just a second.
So it's been objected to, so that means it now becomes a debatable proposition, and the maker of the motion will speak first. Go ahead,
okay.
Sherry.
Thank you. I believe that it's very important as truthers that we give him the time to speak. I am one of the people in the camp that doesn't believe that the plane hit the Pentagon, but because I have been taught to be a critical thinker and to be open-minded, I think that we deserve to hear from Mr. Chandler. He has also been a very important part of the truth mission, and I think that we should hear him and get through this darn debate about this so we can move on to supporting the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry and get this into court instead of having this infighting.
Okay.
Stay
on the motion, please. Okay. All right. So who would like to speak against the motion?
I would speak against it, Barbara.
Barbara.
Craig.
Barbara.
Shall I go ahead? Okay. Yeah, just briefly. I agree with Cheryl. The Q's and A's and comment period can provide for an extended comment and, of course, for Craig's comment back and forth. We don't need to amend the agenda to add equal time. I don't think that's appropriate. If David Chandler would like to have to be on the agenda next time for a longer period of time with Q's and A's back by Craig and the rest of us, that would be appropriate. That's my comment.
Okay. Anybody who else would like to speak in favor of the agenda?
I wouldn't mind making a comment. Barry Zwicker.
Barry, you want to speak in favor of? Go ahead.
Yeah, I object just on the basis that it's not according to the agenda.
No. This isn't. I'm asking for someone in favor. If there's anybody else who wants to speak in favor.
I'm in favor.
What? Well, say your name. Say your name.
Roger. I'm in favor.
Roger. Okay, Roger, please go ahead.
Because I think the nature of this call is the immediacy of clearing the air, and to
no, that's not it.
For this to be
excuse me, you're out of order. Whoever's interrupting this now, please hold your silence. So it's your turn to speak. Go ahead. Roger.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I think it helps to clear the air at this meeting rather than to drag this into meeting after meeting. And it's clearly that there is either an understanding or a misunderstanding going on here. We should be able to understand what we can and move on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who else would like to speak against the
proposal? Me, Cheryl.
Barry Zwicker.
Cheryl, go ahead.
Craig.
Okay. First of all, we have a packed agenda, and if we give David Chandler 20 minutes to, and then Q&A, we will get not to either of our other speakers, and that's not really fair to do to them. They put this on their schedule, and they're going to be here to do this, and I frankly would like to hear them. So I think Barbara's suggestion that if David would like his own time to do it at the next month and not this month, because it's already taken up and we just don't have the time. He can use the Q&A to express his thoughts for tonight.
Well, I think maybe he could put it on the
internet.
Out of order.
Who else would like to speak in favor of the agenda? Who is me?
I would like to speak for myself.
Yes, please go ahead, David.
It's a matter of basic, fundamental fairness that if I am going to be accused of something, which is what I understand this presentation, so to speak, to be about, that I should be able to answer that. And I think that if there's any hope of putting this matter to rest, you need to hear both sides of the story, not just a one-sided presentation. This is an accusation, and I have a response, and I would like to be heard.
If I can intervene here real quickly, David, how much time would you like to speak to respond to what you what?
I don't think it should take all that long.
Ken, I object to this question.
A
proposal's been made, and
well, the proposal's unclear as to how much time we're talking.
Equal time was asked for.
Huh?
It wasn't David's motion, it was Sherry's motion, and she asked for equal time, and that's what we're debating right now.
All right, fair enough. You're right. Okay, so who else would like to speak against the motion?
I would. This is Sheila Case.
Sheila, go ahead.
And Barry Zwicker, too.
I would like to say that I don't believe that David Chandler should be given any space at all to speak on this teleconference, either now or at another time, because this is a teleconference of truthers, people who are questioning the official story and have good reason to question the official story. If we want to hear the official story, we can go to the New York Times or CNN. We don't need to come here.
You're out of order. You're out of order. That's an attack on David. Okay, that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing.
That's my opinion. I don't be given room to. I don't believe he's a truther. I don't believe he should be here.
Well, you're not free to calumniate other people on this call, Sheila. So I'm going to warn you. If you do that again, you're going to be bounced off the call.
Not free to do what?
Definitely. Attack other people in the truth movement.
Well, I don't believe he's in the truth movement.
This is Michael Cook.
All right. I'm officially calling you out of order for the future on that question. Okay. And if you try it again,
your opinion. You asked for me to speak, and this is what I believe. We should, if you really want to have open and honest debate, you should allow people to speak. You do not agree with Ken.
You're out of order. You're out of order. I've called you out of order, and if you respond again, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to take you off the call. You are speaking against him and not about this proposal. You are not free to use your time on this call to calumniate other people on this call. Do you understand that, Sheila? Yes or no?
No, I don't.
Then you need to leave this call immediately and don't come back, please.
Ken, I can we just calm down and just move on? Let Sheila stay. A very heightened emotional experience for all of us. So
I understand that, but she's not free to attack other people to use her and use her for time. So she's gone. Now, who else would like?
No, you would have to have a vote on that, Ken. You can't do that unilaterally.
Yeah. I agree.
No, you can appeal. You can appeal the decision of the chair anytime you want to. Okay, go ahead.
We appeal the decision of the chair.
Okay, the decision
seconded.
Of the chair to eject Sheila has been made by Barbara and seconded by Craig.
Craig.
So, yeah. So we will then take a vote on. I guess I get to speak in favor of my ejection. I think we have established a protocol on this call that makes it very clear that there is going to be mutual respect for all participants. What Sheila just did was to launch a major insult against one of the other participants on the call. And as far as I'm concerned, we've already bounced people off this call for good for that purpose, for having done things like that. And I'm not going to tolerate it, frankly. That's my position. Barbara, you may speak to the appeal. Go ahead.
Leave your motion to escape.
Barbara Honegger. Barbara Honegger.
Seconded by Craig McKee.
Barbara Honegger. It's your turn to speak. Please speak to why. Oh, come on. Who's making all that noise?
People are leaving the call.
Barbara, did you want to say something?
Well, I think it's self-evident that Sheila has a right to her opinion, and it's very heartfelt, and we just wait for the vote.
Yep. Okay. So Barbara's position is that type of speech should be tolerated, and mine is that it should not, and I moved on that basis to protect the call. I removed her from the call. So now we will vote on whether
I want to speak as well. I want to speak as well.
Well, how many people would still like to speak to this question before we? I'm not sure that the appeal of the decision of the chair is endlessly debatable. Does anybody know? Barry, you're a good person to consult on this. How is this a debatable proposition?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Barry Zwicker, you're asking me?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
that's
yes,
well. I'll answer it. I'm interested in being sought out for this. I'm a radical informational Democrat myself since I went to the University of Michigan. So free speech has to include speech that makes other people uncomfortable.
No. The question is whether under Robert's rules this is a debatable proposition or not. Come on, don't go off on a tangent on us, please.
I think there's a reason why there's a chairman, and that is. The reason the chairman, should have
the check.
So I was asking you, Barry, because you have some background in this. But if you don't know the answer, then you don't know the answer. So
I'm not an expert on Robert's rules.
Okay. All right. How about this? We'll have because this is really taking up a lot of our time. We'll take two more on each side of the question, and then we'll vote. Okay.
This is David Rose. I have a point of procedure.
Yes, go ahead, David.
I just wanted to tell you I got on the call about 8 minutes ago. So.
We
I'm
see
sorry?
You here. Thank Excuse you, David. You're
okay.
Here. Okay.
Ken?
Great.
Okay.
Ken, this is Ann Hendricks. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Would the other speakers perhaps go first, and then there'd be more time for those who want to stay and hear out whatever the Craig and David want to discuss?
Good idea.
Or present.
I'm not understanding what you're saying.
The other speakers who were...
Good idea.
If there's time at the end of the call...
Going to come second and third, and could they be...
She wants to change the order of the agenda.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's an out of order, because right now we're talking about an appeal decision of the chair, and that has to be resolved before we can do anything else. I'm sorry. You're out of order.
Sorry.
Okay. So back to the question of the appeal of the decision of the chair. Anybody else?
I'd like to speak, Ken. I'd like to speak, Ken. It's Craig.
So go ahead, Craig, and then we'll take one in case there's one in favor. Go ahead, Craig.
I absolutely think Sheila should be allowed back on the call. She is entitled to her opinion, and she didn't say anything. She said that if she wants to hear the official story, she'll go to the New York Times. That's not an attack in and of itself to say that somebody supports the official story or doesn't. And I'm not saying that David is supporting the official story, but Sheila has the right to say that, I believe, and I don't think we should be kicking her off for that.
Okay. She said he was not a 9/11 truther. Did you hear that, Craig?
Yes, I heard that. I heard that, and I think that's not an attack. That's an opinion.
Okay, fine. Okay, so who else would like to speak in favor of the
removal?
It's
an attack on
anybody?
My credibility.
Yeah.
Anybody else would like to speak in favor of? Anybody else would like to speak in favor of the removal of the ejection? Anybody else want to speak in favor of it?
I think the objection should be removed. I think a person who attacks someone as a person, as their credibility, as their integrity, to say I'm not a truther is like saying I don't have personal integrity. And that's what I'm hearing when she said that. So I think you were within your right to remove her from the call.
Yeah, I don't see what else I could do. Okay, so anybody else want to speak against the ejection?
Yes, Michael Cook.
Michael, go ahead.
I've met Sheila, and David, I'm such a fan. You've done such incredible work with your videos and everything, and I would love to speak with you. I think privately is probably better about your position on the Pentagon. But
free speech.
Oh, but we have limited time on this call and everything. You know, it's a tough road to hoe. And everybody who's here, I love you. Thank you.
All right, and anybody else want to speak in favor of the ejection, and then we will move to a vote.
Yeah, this is Dwayne.
Dwayne, go ahead.
Yes, I think the ejection should hold because Sheila was completely out of order attacking another member. Well, the order of business was to decide whether to give equal time to David or to have him just make his comments during the question. That's what the business was. It wasn't about what Sheila basically made a personal attack and refused to get off the line. That is grounds for removal, period.
Yep. Okay, thank you. And so now we will move to a vote. I haven't heard three from both sides of the question. All in favor of supporting the chair, say aye.
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 All against the decision of the chair, say nay.
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 All right, Craig, we're going to need to take a roll call on this, so go ahead.
Okay. Bonnie Faulkner?
Nay.
Barry Zwicker?
Nay.
Okay, we're saying nay to a motion to uphold the chair, right?
Right. Nay.
So a nay means you're against the chair, okay.
Actually, let's start this over again. This is an appeal of the decision of the chair. So yes votes are supporting the appeal. Okay, the appeal of the decision. So in other words, Barbara's position. So a yes vote favors Barbara's position that she should not have been ejected. A no vote favors the chair's decision to remove her. Okay?
Oh, I thought it was the opposite.
It was just the other way around a minute ago.
Let's start over.
Start over.
There was bad static on my line, and that last back and forth. Could it be clarified, please, what yay and nay means?
Yes, yay is supporting the appeal of the decision of the chair made by Barbara, which is that she should not have been ejected. A no vote is a support of the chair's position.
You said it wrong.
No.
Can we simplify it and just say if you vote yay, you want Sheila back on. If you vote nay, you want her off.
Very good.
Yes, that's simple.
Yes. Okay,
so Bonnie?
Yes.
Yes. Barry?
Yay. Yes.
Sherry?
Oh, I don't know. don't want to check anybody off. No, this whole thing is ridiculous. I'm a school teacher.
Nobody's asking you if you think it's ridiculous, Sherry. They just want a yes or a no.
You can abstain, Sherry.
Please.
Give her another chance for Pete's sake. She can't behave herself. You know, be a little kinder to everybody.
So then you're saying yes.
I guess so, but she just tell her to be a good
girl. Okay, that's all we need to hear. Anne?
No, I object to that. Cheryl led her into a yes vote there. That's improper. That's very improper, Cheryl. You should know better than that.
I wasn't trying
now,
to lead her. I was trying to get
clear
on what she was saying.
No, so then you should
ask her
what
she's
saying.
I said, so is that a yay?
No, you should. Well, why didn't you say, is that a nay? You
and
see?
I'm going to abstain. How about that?
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Okay, all right, go ahead.
Perfect.
Please continue, sir. Great.
Anne Hendricks.
Yes, bring her back.
Marie Spike.
No. Nay.
Ken Freeland. Okay, you're waiting till right. Chuck Smith.
Nay.
Kat McGuire.
Yeah, bring her back if she'll refrain.
She said she would not. That's why she was asked to leave. Okay.
That's not part of the vote. That's not part of the vote.
The vote is whether she should be brought back or not. Okay.
Nay.
So yes. Nay.
Who was that?
Okay. So we had another vote change in the middle. Okay. Barbara Honegger?
Yay, assuming that, if I understand correctly, that's to bring her back.
To bring her back, yes.
Yep.
Pierre Ketchum?
No.
David Cole?
No.
Dan Hennen?
Bring her back.
Greg Flynn.
Yes, bring her back.
I don't believe David has a vote in this, Ken. He's a new member, and I think we have to.
David,
do we not have a rule?
David,
that's right.
Huh?
Do we not have a rule that says you?
I corresponded
Pardon me?
Ahead of time to get on this call, and I was invited onto the call.
Yes,
I know that. I'm not.
So I'm sorry. Craig has a question about a rule. Go ahead, Craig. What was the rule?
I don't believe that people on their first call have votes. I think we've had this discussion before.
That's correct.
Do we not have a rule that you have to be on like 3 months and 3 months before you can begin voting?
I guess that's right. I think that's
right.
I think
that's true. Yeah.
Well, wait. No. That's with respect to matters having to do with the rules and so forth. Okay, we're voting on rules. We're voting on constitutional questions only. I believe that's how that has.
I don't think so.
That's not my understanding.
I think if you can't vote on your first call, no matter what. That's my understanding.
Okay. Well, I guess you can make a provisional vote, David. And if the matter's close, we can look up. We can look that up. Okay?
My provisional vote is leave her off.
Okay.
John O'Malley.
Yes, bring her back.
Cheryl Curtis.
Yes.
Carl Golliman.
Yes, and a suggestion, maybe in the future, instead of immediate and total excommunication, you could just put people on mute for increments of 15 minutes or so.
Idea.
Okay, Mike Cook.
Yes, we all need to control our promotions.
Dwayne Dietz?
No.
Roger Borries?
No.
Marty Hopper?
No.
James Hufford?
Yes.
Fran Schur?
This is my second time on this call. I was on the call maybe a couple of years ago. Do I get a vote?
I know, but you've been a member for more than 3 months, so you may vote.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just feel it's destructive communication, so I'll say no.
Thank you.
David Rold?
Yes, we'll have her back.
Okay. Let me try to total this up here.
This is Wilt. I just joined. What's up?
Too late.
Yeah, too late for this vote.
Good.
Okay, my first count says 12 to bring her back and 9 not to. I'm going to count a second time just to be sure, because I know how all hell can break loose if we get these things wrong.
That's what I have as well.
Is that right? Okay, I'll just do one more quick one to be sure. Yeah, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah. So who's being banished?
No,
not anymore.
Gandalf.
Yeah, I have 12. I have 12-9.
Okay, bring her back.
In favor of bringing her back, I can let her know.
Can somebody? Yeah, you can call her, Craig, or somebody else call her.
Yeah.
We need to wait to move forward until she's back.
Right. In the meantime, I want to make the following statement as a matter of privilege. I want to make the deepest and heartfelt apology I can to David Chandler for what he's just experienced at our call, and I resign forthwith as the facilitator of the 9/11 Truth teleconference because I don't feel there is sufficient support here for keeping a civil order, so I will no longer serve as facilitator.
Wow.
But you'll finish the call, won't you?
I'm sorry?
You'll finish this call, won't you?
Yeah, I plan to stay here for the call. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I
wish you wouldn't be a quitter. None of us should be quitters, and we should all be getting along. Okay?
Yeah.
Important people
Let's
in the world.
Let's all get along.
We are.
No quitters.
You do that job very well, and we don't want to see you leave.
No,
I'm sorry, but for me it's for me it's an unconditional requirement that the body supports civil discourse, and clearly that's not the case, so I can no longer serve this body. That's all. I have to just accept that. This body has different values than I have.
No, I don't think that's the case, Ken. I don't.
I'm very clear on it.
Okay. Ken, this is Ann. I want to say appreciate everything you have done and do always. My vote yes was a vote for unity because we are small. And anyway,
unity. Because we're small, we shouldn't be calling each other names. Okay, that's my position. Yeah,
okay.
But apparently not yours. So, okay, that's fine.
Ken, I think most of us agree with you on that, but we're saying that this is an emotional topic and to give her another chance. That's what we're saying.
What does another chance mean? What does another chance mean?
Another chance?
The vote has been taken.
She can't refrain from saying these kinds of things when it's in her head to say them.
Yeah, could I make a suggestion? This is Sherry. I'm kind of coming from a Native American viewpoint here, and what I would think we should do is maybe come up with an oath that we all agree to. We all agree to some oath of kindness and, you know, kind of like the golden rule, basically. Let's all agree to it from this point forward, and let's move on with our call and welcome her back and welcome David and listen to each other with our hearts open. That's what I say we do from this point forward, not waste any more time.
This is Michael. I'm all in favor of that stuff, but the problem is that that's how they get in. And I'm not saying Sheila is one of them, you know. I mean, I like Sheila. I'm sorry she got emotional. Everybody gets emotional. But that let everybody in thing tends to stall stuff.
We're just saying Sheila, not everybody.
Yeah, I know.
David rolled back.
Sheila and anybody else that calls names, yeah.
Okay, can we move forward?
Well, you're the facilitator, Cheryl. We're waiting for you.
I'm not the facilitator.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Who is?
All right,
this
is David Rold. I'm
going to call, right?
I'm going to say something.
Okay. All right, fine. I will finish the call as facilitator then, because it really wouldn't be fair for me not to. But after this call, I will no longer serve. Okay. So we were in the process of amending the agenda, and the question was whether or not there should be a equal time for David Chandler to respond to Craig. And that's where we're at. And I think we're ready to take a vote on that. So all in favor of, if there's no objections, let's move forward.
I object. I want to say something about on this.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, this is David Rold. So I received the agenda for the call, and I don't know who wrote the agenda, but the agenda said that somebody was unfairly attacking Craig McKee, that David Chandler and the group were unfairly attacking Craig McKee because Craig like has a position on the Pentagon, and they're more, David Chandler is more like the official position, and we already kicked somebody else off these calls several months ago for agreeing, seeming to be close to the official position on the Pentagon. I never heard of David Chandler before.
Yeah.
So I thought that Sheila's like position that.
So we're speaking on the question of whether or not he should have equal time. We're not speaking about anything
have,
else. Right
I
now.
Agree with Sheila that some okay, we've already
okay,
decided
say
we
that.
Don't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's please not get off on these endless tangents, people, okay? Thank you.
I'm not getting off on tangents. Uh-huh. I'm saying we've taken a position that we don't believe the official story on the Pentagon, so we should...
I also need to correct your statement that we kicked somebody off the call for being too close to the official story. That's not the case. He was the person in question was removed from the call for something entirely unrelated to his position on the Pentagon, okay? So get the facts straight, please. Now... let's go to a vote. We're voting on whether or not David Chandler should be given equal time to respond to Craig's allegations tonight. So, all in favor of
friendly amendment. No, seriously, you need to clarify that he would be allowed to speak during the Q&A.
Of course he is. Everybody is. We've already established that, but that's not the question. Is whether he should be given equal time, okay? Whether he should have an equal the microphone, in other words, to Craig's. That's the question, okay?
Equal time during this call.
Yes, during this call. Correct. That's my understanding of the. That's my understanding of the proposal, Sherry. But if I have it wrong, please correct me. Is that what you intend? Please let Sherry clarify.
During this call, and then you take it at the end after all the speakers have already spoken. That would be fine.
But you were asking for him to have equal time with that with what Craig has, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Can I do a friendly amendment?
This is Cheryl.
Point of order.
Yes. Point of order.
I just heard.
Identify yourself.
Dwayne. This is Dwayne.
Dwayne.
I just
order.
Heard a little tack on. Let's say assumption that David would be given time at the end.
At the end of Craig's presentation.
What I heard is at the end of the whole meeting.
Everybody happy.
I don't agree with that at all.
I can't hear what you're saying. Can you repeat that, please?
The question is this idea of time at the end. That's not any kind of emotion. It just popped in by someone's suggestion.
And we should
not be voting on that.
Okay, I understand. That wasn't part of the original motion. So, Sherry, you are asking for equal time for David. That is the motion, I thought that would be fair to do.
Yes.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay,
so
this is Cheryl.
Yes, Cheryl.
I'd like to make a counter proposal that David can do it. Is this procedurally? Is that how I would do it if I want to make a counter proposal?
The counter proposal is
an amendment.
I don't think she's making an amendment. I think she's making a counter proposal. Aren't you, Cheryl?
I'm wanting to suggest something that we would vote on. Is that a proposal or an amendment? I don't know.
That depends what it is.
And it counters what's on the table right now.
Yeah. So Yeah, what you say, what you probably would do is say, if this motion fails, I will propose as follows, and then you can say what your motion would be, okay?
No, no, because if this motion passes, that they're already voting, that it's already on the table, that's what I oppose it. We have an agenda of two other people waiting to speak, and I think it's unfair to them to give David Chandler, who's never been on the call before, in my equal time with Craig today. If he, as someone suggested, put himself on the next month's call and he can respond, but tonight it doesn't work. It doesn't work with our agenda.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amen. Clear to me that time is not an issue for you guys, given how much time you're going around in circles on this.
No, it is an issue, David. We're already behind. It is an issue.
We're way behind.
Time is a precious thing.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the idea of putting Kevin Barrett on and letting him have his say and then let everybody talk till they...
Well, Kevin's not on the call yet because he was told he's presenting second, so he's not on here yet.
Oh, lovely.
Why don't we put the whole...
This is absurd, by the way. I've never heard such absurdity.
Put this part of the agenda as last.
It's a circus.
And just let the other speakers come on right now and speak, and then we'll deal with this issue last.
You guys are doing a great job. Craig, appreciate it.
Craig and
just tell Sheila to shut up and turn and mute her and get
okay. Whoa. That's not fair. Come on.
Not at all.
Okay. Right now we are on the motion before us is whether or not David should have equal time. Cheryl is trying to create a counter proposal of some sort here, but I'm just really not clear about how we would do that in the middle of this one, because we can only attend to one thing at a time. My suggestion to her was that she say, if this motion fails, I will propose following behind it, and that would encourage people then to vote against this proposal in favor of hers. That's the way that it's often done, okay? But I'm just suggesting that I don't know how else you're going to do this, Cheryl, because right now we're on this subject, okay?
Well, I think it's an amendment. I mean, it's an amendment to give David equal time.
It's not an amendment,
call.
No. I see what you're saying. Yes, fair enough. Okay, so the amendment from Cheryl is that the equal time be given to David on the following month's call. Is that correct, Cheryl?
Yes.
Okay, so now we have to discuss the amendment. So, Cheryl,
was that seconded?
Yeah, was it seconded? Is there a second to the amendment?
Oh, my God.
I second.
All right, so moved and seconded that the motion be amended according to Cheryl's idea. So, Cheryl, you get to speak to it first. Go ahead.
Well, I think said what I need to say about it is that we have an agenda and we have lots of people, and David has never been on the call before, and so I think it's really fair to give him his time next month. And let us move on with our agenda this month.
Amen.
Okay, anybody want to speak against the proposal, the amendment?
This is Sherry Aspen. I would like to say that maybe we could just switch the agenda items, and instead of doing...
Out of order.
Out of order.
Yeah, the question is whether or not you're in favor of this amendment or not.
No.
Do you want to speak against it or not, Sherry? Because if you don't, somebody else probably does.
I thought I was out of order.
You're not out of order if you want to speak against the amendment, but you are out of order if you change the subject.
I'm speaking
against
the amendment because I would rather have our agenda tonight be switched to switch fast.
Okay, I understand. Okay, thank you. Okay, fair enough. And who else would like to speak in favor of the motion, the amendment?
Dwayne. Okay, we are taking more time just trying to figure out how we're going to conduct this than it would take to have David have equal time. So the simplest thing to do is just allow him to have equal time.
No.
That would be the fastest way to do things.
Oh.
Okay, so you've spoken in favor of was that in favor of the motion? Really?
No,
it was against.
Well, I asked for somebody to speak in favor. Would you please listen? In favor. Who would like to speak in favor of the motion?
Oh, Carl Gallagher.
I'm in favor of it.
Huh? Who?
Is there going
to
be an order?
The motion is to what?
Who would like to speak in favor of the amendment?
I would.
Carl.
No, I would.
I'm sorry. That was my confusion. If you were speaking against it, you were in order. That wasn't against. Now we're back to four. Okay. Who else?
What's the amendment?
The amendment is to allow him equal time, but on the next teleconference as opposed to this teleconference.
I'm in favor.
Yeah. This is Marie Spike. I'm definitely in favor of that.
Okay. So who else would like to speak against the motion?
This is Sheila Casey, and I'm against it.
Okay. Just go ahead.
Yes, I'm not allowed to say why, so I'll just say I'm against it.
Why can't you say why?
Just move on, Ken, please.
Yeah.
I want to be bounced off the call again.
No, well, don't provoke
right.
her, Ken.
You're gonna, yeah.
Yes.
This is David Rold. I'm against the amendment because I don't think he should be allowed equal time at all that next month.
You
either.
Are, okay,
so
we're not taking it against. Okay, so okay, I think
you
we've heard.
For
I think
the amendment.
No, I would no. So, we'll just go
for
it. So let's take a vote. I think we've heard plenty of arguments, both sides. All in favor of the amendment to allow David equal time on the next teleconference as opposed to this teleconference as the proposal that we will then vote on, say aye.
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 All opposed? All opposed?
Nay.
No.
No.
Nay.
Opposed.
No.
Now they're going to have to.
Well, take the roll call.
Okay, so a yes means he gets time next month?
Correct.
Yes means getting time next month is what we're going to vote on, as opposed
right.
to the original proposal,
okay.
which is that he gets extra time tonight.
Okay, so this
and,
is an amendment that would make...
And if I could clarify, that doesn't preclude... David from speaking during the Q's and A's.
Yeah,
we know that. Five times, okay? It's very clear that everybody on the call can speak during the Q's and A's, okay? Let's go.
So, Ken, I'm confused about the vote. Can you explain that again?
Yes, I can. So we have a proposal from Sherry that David be allowed equal time to respond to Craig. We are now considering an amendment that would change that language to allowing David equal time on the next teleconference as opposed to this teleconference, which we would then need to vote on once we agree that that amendment is acceptable.
Okay, so
if you vote yes, you're saying
that you want it to be next month.
Correct.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You want that to
and
be the proposal
clarify,
that we're considering.
And if you're voting no, you're saying you don't want him at any time, right?
If
no.
You're voting no, you're saying you don't
no.
want this proposal amended, for crying out loud.
Ken, take a deep breath. I know this is tough.
It's not tough. It's tough to repeat. It's tough to have to continue to repeat. But it's been clarified three times now. We're voting on whether to amend the proposal in front of us. Yes means you want to amend it according to Cheryl's dictate. No means you're opposed to the amendment, period. It's that simple. Let's vote. I'm sorry, Craig, you're taking the roll call. Come on.
Okay. Bonnie?
No.
Barry?
No.
Sherry?
No.
Anna?
Yes.
Marie?
Oh, I'm confused.
I don't blame you.
Okay. So if you vote yes, you are voting to amend the proposal before us to mean next teleconference will be the proposal
okay.
in front of
us. All right, that's what I thought. So yes, next teleconference.
Chuck.
Yes, I'm in favor of David having full time next time.
Okay, technically that's not what we're voting on, but I know what you mean.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Kat?
Yes, next month.
Barb?
Yes, next month, thank you.
Peter? Ketchum?
Yes. Yes.
David Cole?
Yes.
Dan Hennen.
Yes.
Greg Flynn.
No.
John O'Malley.
Yes.
Sheila Casey.
No.
Cheryl Curtis.
Yes.
Oh, it's your motion, so obviously. Carl Golovin.
Yes.
Mike Cook.
Yes, true speech.
Dwayne Dietz.
Dwayne?
No.
Roger Borys.
No.
Marty Hopper.
Yes, although this is very confusing because it's not clear what he's getting this time. So, but.
Well, it just means we're going to be voting on whether he gets 20 minutes next time. That will be the main motion if this passes.
As opposed to voting on whether he will get 20 minutes this time, which we would be voting on if you vote no. If the no vote's taken, okay? If the yes vote's taken, then we'll be voting on whether he'll get 20 minutes next time.
Oh, okay. I'm still confused, but I'll vote yes for now.
James Hufford.
No.
Fran Schur.
I vote no for David to have equal, if that means David gets equal time this time to clear the air.
That's correct.
David Rold.
No.
Okay. So let me total
Bill
this
Wilt,
now.
Yes.
Oh, Bill Wilt. Sorry, I forgot you.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. 1, 2.
Yes, we got it.
5, 6.
Have you voted, Craig?
9. I'll vote yes. So that's 9 no's. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I just joined Nita and
12, 14.
Hi, Nita.
14 yeses. So that means that the amendment passes.
Okay, the amendment passes, and therefore we will now vote on whether or not David should be given equal time for the next teleconference.
No, we just voted on that.
That's what you just voted on.
No, it's not.
No, we did not. We just voted
yes,
on whether
we did.
To amend.
No,
we
did
not.
Voted.
That's what I voted on.
Okay.
No, we voted to whether or not we were going to amend the existing proposal to mean next month rather than this month where he would get the equal time. But we haven't voted on the proposal itself yet. That is still in front of us to be now voted on.
No, it isn't. Right. But no, this proposal superseded that one.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
No, it amended it.
No.
It amended it. It proposes an amendment, for crying out loud, people. Come on. So that
you can't have it both ways. You can't have equal time both times.
Oh, my God.
No, Ken, my understanding, and I proposed the amendment, was that this means that he would get the 20 minutes next week as opposed to this week. That's what we were voting on.
Yes.
An amendment to a proposal, Cheryl, it's an amendment to a proposal. It's not the proposal itself. What we agree to do is amend the proposal to agree now with your language. Now we have to still vote on the proposal itself. Don't you understand that?
You just voted
against the proposal.
Okay. Can I have a go at explaining this, Ken?
Please. Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. Cheryl proposed was an amendment to Sherry's original idea. So the amendment means that now we are looking at whether he will get 20 minutes next month. So that means that we still have to approve that.
Correct. Okay, so now we're voting on that because we've already discussed that ad nauseum.
Look, don't stop worrying about whether we just did. We're going to do it again, okay? So everybody stop.
Now we are voting on whether or not David Chandler will be given 20 minutes next month to respond to Craig, okay?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, can I say something?
All in favor.
Wait, hold. Ken?
Yes.
I hate to do it, but I think we have to have discussion on this. Do we not?
No, we just had to. No, we've been discussing it ad nauseum. We're done.
Yes.
We were done. We were ready to vote when somebody proposed this amendment. Now we're back to voting, which is where we were at before. All in favor of allowing David 20 minutes next month, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 Well, I believe the ayes have it, but if anybody wants to challenge it, we can take a roll call vote.
Yes. Yeah, we have to challenge that, Ken. It was not clear. Not clear at all.
Let the guy speak.
Huh?
Can I say something? This is David Chandler. I don't want to speak for 20 minutes. I want to speak for probably about 2 minutes. I'd like to do it now or right after Craig speaks because I have an objection to what he's about to say, and that's all it's all about. I'm not going to do a presentation for you guys.
David, it's out of order for this proposal, but as soon as we're done with this proposal, since we're still on the minutes, you can propose that, okay? You're free to propose that. And ask for that time, okay? All right.
Well, what David has just said is that he's not willing to do a 20-minute presentation next time.
You're putting words in my mouth. I did not say anything. I did not use the word willing. I said I did not ask for 20 minutes. All I need is a few minutes to object to something that I believe Craig is about to say. That's about it.
All right. So
preemptive.
All right, so we're still on the question of whether or not to offer David 20 minutes for next month. That's really what we have to vote on, and then we can move on to other questions, which I believe David has a proposal for. We would also like to amend the agenda. Okay, so let us please vote. Or did we vote?
We did vote. We need a roll call.
Okay. Yeah, I understood it to be an affirmative vote, and I don't believe that's been challenged. So
yes, it has been challenged.
Okay, well,
indeed.
Take the roll call then. Take the roll call.
Okay. Do you want to tell everybody again just to be sure what we're voting so we don't have any confusion?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. What we're voting on is whether or not David Chandler will be offered 20 minutes to. Make a counter presentation to Craig's presentation today for the next teleconference. If you vote yes, you are in favor of that. If you vote no, you're opposed to that.
Wait a second. That makes no sense to say today for the next teleconference. So are we talking today or the next?
We're talking in the next teleconference.
I
the
never
next
said today. I never said today. I did not use the word at all.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
We're talking. Oh.
Okay, Craig, could you take the role?
All right. Okay. Bonnie.
I abstain.
Okay. Barry?
No.
Sherry?
Yes.
Anna?
Yes.
Or Anne, I'm sorry. Marie?
Yes.
Chuck?
David says he doesn't want it, so I say no.
Okay. Kat?
Yes.
Barbara?
Yes, to offer it.
Okay. Peter Ketchum?
Yes.
David Cole?
Yes.
Dan Hennen? Did we lose Dan? Greg Flynn?
No.
John O'Malley?
Yes.
Sheila Casey?
No.
Cheryl Curtis?
No, because he doesn't want it.
Carl Golovin?
No, because he only wants 2 minutes tonight.
Mike Cook?
Oh, sure.
Dwayne Dietz?
No.
Roger Boris.
Wayne?
Yes, we should offer it to him if he would like it.
Marty Hopper.
Yes.
James Hufford.
No.
Fran Schur.
Yes, if he still wants it.
David Rold.
No.
I'm going to say no. And Bill?
No.
Okay, let me do this again.
Are you still downloading something?
I have 12 yeses.
Nita, you didn't ask for me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nita.
Nita, no, I vote no.
Okay. I have 12-12.
I have 13-13.
Okay, I'm going to count again because I want to be sure here.
Has anybody told Kevin Barrett he could just go home?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kevin Barrett here. I have been here expecting to talk about Iran. If I can break the tie, I would say yes.
Thank you, Kevin. If only.
Now I get 13 yes and 12.
I'm still getting 12-12, Cheryl. I don't know where you're getting 13-13.
Let me see.
Well, Kevin Barrett just came in. He's a yes.
Yeah, well, you kind of have to be around for the discussion, though, the whole discussion.
We could dedicate next month to both of them and let Kevin finish the show.
Yeah. That's not fair to Craig.
Yeah, I'm getting 12 and 12 still, too.
Why isn't it fair to Craig?
Well, okay, that's fine. This
Chuck,
is
make
I'll
a motion.
I'll break the tie. I'll break the tie and vote yes, so he can have it if he would like it. So that will
good.
Break the tie.
Good.
Thank you.
Free speech.
So I believe we are still on the agenda, and the question is whether anybody else would like to make any kind of amendment to tonight's agenda. I think. You said, David, that you would like to request something?
I would just like to have a brief response, or I can even give it right now. It's just a minute or two, a whole lot less than taking another vote.
It's not appropriate to say something before Craig.
No. All right, so, it's not appropriate what Craig's going to say, but that's all right. Go ahead.
All right. Would you like to request some time?
That was an attack on Craig, I just heard. Maybe he should be bounced.
No.
Sheila, I'm going to warn you.
Yes, Sheila.
You,
Sheila,
you're way out of order, and I'm getting tired of you again, Sheila, because you do not care about this teleconference. You just care about your partisan position. You do not care about the people and the feelings on this teleconference. It's not fair to the rest of us.
Ken,
you will
just,
need to
Ken,
keep.
Ken,
let's yeah.
move on,
yeah.
please.
Yeah.
Okay, so David, you would like to request how much time, please?
I'll probably take about a minute or two. I just want to say one thing.
Okay. So let's say may we reserve at least 2 minutes for David to respond after Craig's teleconference.
Oh, God.
I'm going to say, if there's no objection, we'll just take that we are offering that. Okay. Is there
I
any
object.
Objection to him? Okay, there's an objection, so it becomes a debatable motion. And, David, since you made the proposal, you can speak to why you think you deserve 2 minutes to respond to an accusation made on this teleconference about your situation.
Based on
so go
what
ahead.
Was said, you know,
Hold on. How do you know there's an accusation that's going to be made? That's
right.
You can't prejudging
what I'm going to say.
Exactly.
Because that was his language. His language is that he believes he's going to be accused of.
It sounded like that was your language, Ken.
I'm quoting him.
Well,
okay. Well, never mind.
Nobody can prejudge what I'm going to say.
Yeah, you're out of order.
Well, it's spelled out.
Why do you think? Okay, you may speak to.
According to the announcement,
it
appears that Craig is going to talk about things that were in private communications with the AE-911 Truth Board of Directors, and if he is prepared to share those emails, then that might be discussable. If it's something that he got through some channel, I would like.
Well, point of order. Point of order. Point of order. This is the statement being made.
He's right, David. If you want the time,
well,
you need to speak in favor.
Minutes.
Yeah, okay. I understand. Okay, so,
that's what I'd like
yeah, okay, so David would like 2 minutes because he has an issue with something that he believes, on the basis of what Craig has written, he will be discussing, and it pertains to him, apparently. So That's his position. And who would like to speak against the proposal? Cheryl, go ahead.
Yeah, to me that fits into Q&A mode and time frame, and I wish David had told us this early on that that's all he wanted. I thought he had said he wanted equal time or
I
more.
Tried to get that information from him, Cheryl, and Craig cut me off, okay? So I'm sorry. I did make an effort to try to do that.
It could have saved us all this time anyway. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Well.
So anyway, I think it fits into Q&A
like
mode.
I'd speak against it. The Q's and A's, I agree with Cheryl. 2 minutes is totally appropriate for a comment in the Q&A.
Yeah, we've just wasted an hour discussing something for nothing.
That's your opinion, Craig, but
indeed it is.
The people that made these proposals.
I make a motion to move on with the agenda.
I do too. I second that motion.
Well, I'm sorry, but there's a proposal. So we have to vote on the proposal. We voted up or down, okay? So I'll take that as a request to call the question and let us vote whether or not David should have a minimum of 2 minutes to respond to Craig's presentation.
Now, where did you get this minimum? I never heard that before.
Oh, my God. Huh?
No, not a minimum. Maximum of 2 minutes.
No. He didn't say... Did you say a minimum or maximum 2 minutes?
You just said 2 minutes.
David, can you clarify your proposal?
Make it five. I'll keep it under five.
Thank you. Okay. Oh, so maximum of 5 minutes he's requesting. So all in favor of allowing him that rebuttal period, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay. Nay. Nice.
Take the roll, Craig.
This is ridiculous.
Well, okay. Bonnie.
I abstain.
Barry.
I'm sorry, I'm not clear exactly on what's being voted on this
okay.
moment.
Okay. Barry,
if you want to allow 5 minutes reserve time for a response from David at the end of Craig's presentation, that's a yes. If you don't want him to have that 5 minutes, you say no. Okay,
nay on the basis against all the rules.
Yes, I need to make a clarification on that, Ken, because it sounds like you're saying yay means he speaks and nay means he's not speaking. In fact, he can already speak as part of the regular Q&A.
5 minutes. He cannot speak for 5 minutes as part of the
regular Q&A. I understand that, but it's not a question of does he speak. Let me finish. It's not a question of does he speak or does he not speak. It's a question of does he get special. May I?
Craig, I said this several times. A maximum of 5 minutes reserve time for him. If you're in favor,
I understand that.
Yes. If you're against it, you vote no. Come on. Let's get on with it.
Actually, it started as 2 minutes and then grew to 5 minutes.
We are voting on a maximum of 5 minutes right now. That is the current proposal. So please vote yes or no as Craig calls your name. And let us move forward. Please.
When does
Sherry.
He get the 5 minutes?
Sure,
when does he get the five minutes?
Yes.
After Craig's proposal.
Yes.
After Craig's presentation. After Craig's presentation.
Yes.
Which includes Q&A.
I don't know. No, I would assume that would immediately follow your presentation.
Deal with
and
that when we get
Q&A.
There.
Yeah.
Okay. Sherry.
I vote yes.
Anne.
I abstain.
Marie.
Yes.
Chuck.
Yes.
Kat.
No.
Barbara.
No, because he can use Q&A.
Just say yes or no, please.
Peter?
Yes.
David, Cole?
Yes.
Dan Hennen? Well, I think we lost Dan before, yeah. Greg Flynn?
No.
John O'Malley?
No.
Sheila Casey?
No.
Cheryl Curtis.
No.
Carl Golliman. Is Carl there?
I think he's gone.
Okay, Mike Cook.
I don't know what we're voting on, so I have to abstain.
Fine. Please, no remarks in between, please. We're doing the vote now. Roger Boris. Is Roger there?
Oh, he's muted here. Roger? Roger, if you star six, you can
yes.
mute. Yes.
Please.
Yes, okay.
Dwayne?
Yes.
Marty Hopper? Is Marty there? Or is she muted? Okay, well, James Hufford?
No.
No.
And sure.
Yes.
David Rold.
No.
I'm voting no. Bill Wilt.
Nita.
Yes.
No. Nita?
Nita, I vote no.
No. Okay. Let me do this then. Okay, my first pass through, I get 11 no's and 9 yeses, but I'm gonna double check it.
And I had 12 no's and 8 yeses.
Okay, so we're missing on one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I get 11, 9 for no.
Okay, so he speaks in the Q's and A's.
Yeah, with the same limits as any other questioner, right?
Right.
Right.
All right. Are there any other amendments to the agenda? All right. Hearing none, then we will move forward with the first item on tonight's agenda, which is Craig's presentation. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I've got to bring it to the front of my computer screen here. All right. Sorry, folks, it's just I have a very slow computer and it doesn't want to sort of... Okay, here we are. All right. Okay, thank you. I asked to make this presentation because I want to draw attention to what I think is a serious and worsening situation. The organized group that I have discussed on this teleconference before, which is pushing the official claim that a 757 hit the Pentagon, is going to ever more extraordinary lengths and destructive lengths to take control of the 9/11 discussion. And I don't use those words lightly. They are applying increasing pressure on truthers to marginalize and even purge those who publicly express the position that the government is lying about an impact. The group is trying to focus the truth movement's attention on their Pentagon claims, most of which align with the official story, the exception being that they don't claim Al-Qaeda was at the controls of the plane. They are engaged in an email campaign to pressure influential truthers and truth organizations into accepting their position and shunning those who don't. As someone who has taken a vocal role in opposing this effort, I am now fully in their crosshairs as they do all they can to discredit me, particularly trying to get me fired as a volunteer for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, where I've been a writer for the last 5 years. To be clear, I do not speak for AE in this, but I do speak in defense of AE. The group applying the pressure includes David Chandler, Ken Jenkins, Wayne Costi, and others. They have written to the board of AE telling them I am unfit to be a volunteer and that I may even be an infiltrator. They have also suggested that Chief Operating Officer Kelly David and Operations Manager and Volunteer Coordinator Andy Steele may also be infiltrators. At the very least, they suggest we all behave like infiltrators. In an email to the AE Board on December 29, 2018, Chandler writes, quote, "Set aside the loaded question of are they actual infiltrators? Come at it behaviorally. Krebs' vicious and unreasoning behavior on this issue has been persistent and hard-driving since 2011. Review his record on Truth and Shadows. He has helped transform CIT into a cult where there can be no rational dissent. If this is allowed to continue, it will become the face of the 9/11 truth movement, to an unsettling extent it already has. Somebody is pushing this agenda, and if it isn't Craig, it is someone behind Craig. This is not about theories about the Pentagon. It's about rigid adherence to a fixed dogma that is not allowed to be questioned." Close quote. He goes on, quote, "It is unacceptable for AE or AE employees or volunteers to maintain or promote a noxious website that disparages legitimate, acknowledged 9/11 truthers. Since I have been so vocal, I can understand why I would be a target, although the attacks are grossly dishonest. But all Kelly David has done, in addition to putting AE on a firm organizational and financial footing so that it can continue its vital work, is add her name to the No 757 list and co-moderate the No 757 Facebook group. That is it. Andy Steele has apparently committed the sin of having me on his show 9/11 Freefall and not agreeing to Chandler's demand that he and Costi be interviewed on the show about the Pentagon. Andy is also on the No 757 list. In addition to asking the AE board to go over Andy's head about a 9/11 freefall interview, Chandler had another idea with respect to a group he is coordinator of, Scientists for 9/11 Truth. Quote, "Given that we have overlapping but not identical missions, I would like to explore a more formal advisory relationship between our organizations. What either of us does affects the other and the whole, in quotes, scientific wing, core, of the 9/11 truth movement." Both suggestions received a firm no. The latest segment of this, at least decade-long pressure campaign, the global campaign, started when the Chandler Group wrote to the AE board about a year ago, raising concern about the fact that the AE website listed my site, Truth and Shadows, on its homepage. Quote, "We understand that links to sites do not necessarily indicate an endorsement, but the link to Truth and Shadows and a mission of a link to Scientists for 9/11 Truth may be construed by some as a tacit endorsement of the no plane impact theories by AE. The problem is, if multiple theories proposing alternatives to a large plane impact are eventually discredited, it will not reflect well on AE 9/11 Truth's scientific credibility." Close quote. AE responded by adding the link to Scientists, but the group still objected that the link to Truth and Shadows wasn't removed. The letter concludes with the 11 signatories unanimously saying, quote, that AE's implicit endorsement of any alternatives to the large plane impact theory is damaging to all aspects of the 9/11 truth movement. Chandler intensified his pressure on AE on September 26th when he wrote a letter under the heading Perceived AE Alignment with Truth and Shadows. He opens the letter with, quote, "I have grave concerns about AE, contrary to its character, aligning itself or allowing itself to appear to align with a toxic anti-scientific group at the website Truth and Shadows, which organizes around the, quote, teachings of CIT. The people people I know of who are involved are Kelly David, COO of AE, Andy Steele, host of 9/11 Freefall, and Craig McKee on the AE writing team, the apparent founder of Truth and Shadows. There may be others," close quote. And the letters kept coming. On September 29, Chandler explains why he outright calls the group Citizen Investigation Team infiltrators and part of a cult. In a January 13 email, Chandler urges that a condition of my continued association with AE be that I, in quote, "take down all material from Truth and Shadows and Facebook, which by its presence continues to defame me and my colleagues," close quote. On January 26th, he goes further, quote, "Craig is simply unfit to serve in any capacity with AE because his personal mission is incompatible with the mission of AE. By allowing him to continue working for AE, your silence condones his destructive behavior," close quote. Ken Jenkins, another member of this group, writes on January 14, quote, "It is rather clear to me by now, having observed this situation for years now, that Craig McKee is the ringleader as far as the manipulative hate speech against David, Wayne, myself, and others. I doubt that Kelly or Andy would be initiating this level of destructive and hateful behavior, even though they both seem to go along with it and reinforce it. If you and others concur with this observation, then hopefully some specific action will be directed at Craig individually," close quote. Chandler had a particularly strong reaction to two memes I did on Facebook, both of which I think are pretty mild. One said, does it trouble anyone else that Chandler and his group attack and ridicule those who don't buy the government claim of a 757 crash with the Pentagon? And the second one was, why are David Chandler and his group so focused on pushing us to accept the government's claim of a 757 impact with the Pentagon on 9/11? On January 26th, Chandler wrote a letter to the board referring to my, quote, "vicious meme campaign, close quote. He said, quote, "This is cyberbullying in the extreme based, need I say, on lies." In brackets, he says, "No, I don't support the official story, and no, I don't ignore contrary evidence. This campaign not only affects me personally, but attacking my character attacks the credibility of my work and thus affects AE and the entire 9/11 truth movement." He adds, quote, "In fact, if Craig's meme campaign continues without sanction, it could lead to a cacophony of questioning, not only of my character and some of the key research you depend on for your credibility, but also the corporate status of AE as a leader in the 9/11 truth movement," close quote. He ends the letter with, quote, "When we turn our heads to bullying and look the other way, we encourage more bullying. Where does it stop? We need to stand together," close quote. This theme of my Pentagon position and public statements constituting threats to AE and the entire movement runs through all the communication from Chandler's group. In an email to the board on January 13, Chandler made a veiled threat, which he said he would not act on. Quote, "After all, since I am being defamed by employees and volunteers at AE, I could conceivably be so outraged that I would withdraw all of my work from your organizational endeavors. I am not threatening to do this, nor would I. I am simply illustrating how Craig's verbal assaults constitute a tangible action in conflict with AE 9/11 Truth's mission," close quote. He says that others in the group, quote, "may or may not have actual material to withdraw from AE, as I have, but any of them could hypothetically respond to being denounced by AE volunteers and or employees by publicly denouncing AE in return. Again, I am simply trying to point out what should be an obvious fact, that defamation of contributing members of the movement is contrary to AE 9/11 Truth's mission," close quote. The threat Chandler is making is very clear. Not only is he dropping the hint that he could remove his contributions to AE's material, which he actually has no right to do, but he is insinuating that his group could begin denouncing AE if they don't get what they want. This is a clear threat that the entire truth movement should be concerned about. Chandler and company have turned towards subtle public criticism of AE, which I think indicates just how much harm they are prepared to cause. Chandler wrote on Facebook recently that AE is infiltrated and that it won't address this problem. Quote, "The fact that there are CIT supporters within AE should not be taken as an endorsement of CIT or a total condemnation of AE. Richard and the board have not been rigorous in rooting out blatant infiltrators, either in the past or now. That is a shame, in my opinion," close quote. A recent addition to the Chandler Group effort is Simon Faulkner, who had been a volunteer technical writer for AE some time ago. He recently reappeared to propose new material and a short time later began writing letters to AE senior staff trying to get me fired. When he didn't succeed, he then claimed to be quitting in protest, even though he had not produced anything in 2 years and just one article in 3.5 years. On January 4th, Faulkner wrote to AE staff that supporting CIT is just like supporting Judy Wood. He also says that not taking action about me could spell the end of AE. He claimed that if CNN wanted to interview someone from AE about the upcoming release of the Hulsey report, and they got wind that a volunteer writer didn't think a plane hit the Pentagon, that they would ridicule AE for this. And here's a quote from him. However it unfolds, the mainstream media will get roaring laughter, and all discussions about Hulsey and his report will get drowned out by the laughing. Allowing this to unfold could be the end of AE 9/11 truth.
Okay, that's your time is up.
Yes,
hello. No, it's not. Whoa. I've been talking for 12 minutes.
No, no.
I've been talking for 12 minutes.
I started you at 8:15.
No.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, my bad. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Faulkner then started writing to the TAP Europe group about Barbara Honegger and her Pentagon position, which I'll come back to in a moment. Chandler was brought into the discussion and wrote this on February 12th. I have a concern about the hands-off approach pioneered by AE. I agree that for AE, the out-of-scope assessment is appropriate due to their mission and sphere of expertise, but there is an unfortunate and rather dire side effect. They have an intellectual vacuum in the Pentagon discussion that has been filled by partial theories, misinformation, possibly disinformation, and wild speculation, all without the discipline of the scientific process. That is dangerous to the movement because it is the soft underbelly of the movement, which is what will be attacked and give the world an excuse to not even look at the good work we have done at the WTC. Close quote. Faulkner on February 20th demanded that Honegger apologize and retract her Pentagon position. And he said if she doesn't do this, the next step could be to write open public letters to TAP, AE, and the Lawyers Committee denouncing her, in quotes, misconduct. I would remind everyone that Barbara has been instrumental in raising money and making other essential contributions to the Lawyers Committee and the grand jury effort. But that is not of much interest to Faulkner. Now, here's an important quote from him. He says, if Barbara does not apologize and retract her presentation slash theory, her misconduct could no longer be written off as a series of unintentional mistakes. This would become a definite fraud case. And if this group were to allow that to happen by looking the other way, this group would become complicit in the cover-up of the fraud and hence guilty of the same fraud. This includes people here that represent AE 9/11 Truth and TAP and the Lawyers Committee. This would discredit TAP and the lawyers at minimum and basically end these organizations and their efforts, including the grand jury thing. This could also seriously damage or end AE 9/11 Truth as well, and of course be a major blow to 9/11 Truth in general, close quote. Things get really interesting on the website of Scientists for 9/11 Truth. On February 13, they proposed a text introducing yet another repackaging of Wayne Costey's PowerPoint series on the Pentagon. The group has been flooding the internet with links to different versions of the videos. There was a 5-hour and 40-minute version, one broken into sections, and now a 35-minute version. Costey has spammed as many as 15 links to his video series on a single Facebook post. Anytime I make a comment in any of the groups we're both members of, Wayne will pounce on the comment and ask the same question over and over about how the damage was done to the Pentagon. I've told him I will address his series in writing when I am able, but he keeps taunting me to respond immediately. In the text introducing the new version, we have another subtle shot at AE, this time for public consumption and almost certainly written by Chandler. I can explain to you later why I think that. He writes that AE has left an intellectual vacuum, quote, where unscientific theories could flourish, unchallenged by any kind of scientific process, close quote. This, he writes, quote again, will be used to discredit all of our other work. The good work we have done at the World Trade Center will be ignored, close quote. Where Chandler has been saying that it is good that AE refrains from taking a Pentagon position, he now seems to be blaming AE for leaving a vacuum that could lead to the ignoring of the World Trade Center research. To make things worse still, the scientist group, which now appears to be a platform for the 757 impact lobby, is sponsoring a conference on May 4 in Denver that will be a one-sided show featuring the same claims by the same people we've been subjected to for more than a dozen years. Chandler, Costey, Jenkins, Windham, and Stutt will share the same material, and no one who doesn't support the official crash scenario will be speaking. Imagine, this conference is not intended to challenge the government's lies. It is instead focused on attempting to debunk what most of the truth movement is convinced of, that there was no 757 crash. Clearly, they don't even care that they may take attention from the upcoming release of the Halsey Report, which may be the most significant project that AE has ever initiated. The report is coming soon, perhaps around the same time as this one-note Pentagon event. And as we have seen, efforts are being made to bring the grand jury issue, the Lawyers Committee, and TAP into this Pentagon campaign. For too long, truthers have ignored this red flag. For too long, we have simply accepted what is, in effect, a repackaging of the official story, minus claims of Al-Qaeda involvement. Costi, Chandler, Frank Legg, and the other members of this clique have pushed very hard to shift the burden of proof from the U.S. government to the truth movement. They offer what can at best be called speculation, and they demand we prove exactly how the Pentagon was damaged or default to their position. I believe the government must prove what it claims. Just within the last 2 weeks, Costi has begun claiming that the government, through the Pentagon Building Performance Report by the ASCE, has proven its case that a 757 hit the Pentagon. That's the same ASCE whose poor work on the World Trade Center evidence is now being exposed by Project Due Diligence. Chandler and Costi, I'm coming right to the end, Chandler and Costi have both said they aren't going away on this issue. They will keep the fight over the Pentagon going for years to come. They will divide us over this and blame others for doing the dividing. They will push major elements of the official story and use evidence that is under the complete control of the government to do it. I would be delighted never to have to talk about the Pentagon controversy again. I would be happiest just being able to focus on what I learned from the work of David Ray Griffin and others, which is to look at the official story and then at all the evidence showing that story to be false. I've been told by friends about all the promise that existed in the truth movement in the earlier years before I got involved. Loose change caused a sensation. AE 9/11 truth was formed.
Time's up.
I got two paragraphs to go.
Well,
go ahead.
Nikki.
Let him finish.
Go ahead.
Quickly, Craig. Come on.
AE 9/11 truth was formed, and the official claims about the WTC were crumbling, and very, very few people bought the claim that a 757 hit the Pentagon or that one buried itself underground in Shanksville. What changed to dilute this idealism and excitement? This Pentagon campaign has been a major part of that. Imagine if it had never happened and we had remained largely united against the official story all these years. Despite all the great projects underway in the movement, we are still bogged down by this contrived dispute, being told we must fear CNN bursting in to ridicule us for deviating from the part of the official story that Chandler's group has pledged to defend. It's a mess, and ignoring it will make it worse. We all had the insight to see through the manipulation and deception coming from the mainstream media on and after 9/11. Where has that insight gone? How can we be so easily led astray by a spin campaign dressed up as science? It's a question we had better start asking ourselves. Thank you.
All right, so if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, *6 will put you into the queue. And let's see, Craig is unmuted, okay. So, David Chandler is first, and he is up. Go ahead, David.
Okay.
You may make your statement or
ask question. First question I have, am I speaking now?
Yes.
Okay. First question I have to Craig is I wrote what I consider to be confidential communications to the AE board. Where did you get a hold of these emails that I sent to the board?
I got them through speaking to two board members and one senior staff person who informed me about the content because I was directly involved, directly affected.
Did you give me the name?
No.
So I don't believe you got them in a legitimate manner. That was my primary question.
Wait a minute. Okay, so let me respond to that. The authenticity of the emails and their origin can be confirmed through official channels.
I don't care. I'll send these to everybody in this group if you want them. I'm not sure. I think I actually have the right to do that. But That's not my issue. My issue is, my contention is that you and the people who are supporting you in the, are basically, hey, let me use some creative language here. It's sort of like a cancer on AE, and it's subverting. The AE's mission is not about the Pentagon. It's about the World Trade Center. And this whole thing where you're going around smearing or libeling, whatever the term is appropriate, you're basically trying to tear down legitimate people who have contributed to the 9/11 truth movement and continue to do so. And you're basically, when I use the word cult, I did it advisedly, because what you're doing is you're making your judgments based not on my intellectual processes or whatever I'm doing in that regard. You're judging the fact that you don't like the outcome of my research. So I'm basically conducting this in a scientific manner, where I am looking at things and I'm modifying my beliefs as I go along, because that's what happens in science. And you're basically saying, if I don't agree to CIT's analysis of the situation, I'm somehow a heretic from your perspective. That's where I draw the cult analogy there. So I think it's an apt analogy, and I think that's dangerous for the truth movement. I think science has going for it the fact that it encourages open dialogue, which and critique, mutual critique of analysis and ideas, so that science can progress and it's self-correcting. And when you basically have a fixed set of ideas that you use as a litmus test for whether somebody is a legitimate researcher or not, that's antithetical to what a scientific process is all about. So I don't really have, you know, the other part of my response would be, you read most of my stuff there. I think if you listen to the things that Craig just read, just take the tone of voice out of it and just listen objectively to what I said, I stand by every word. So I think that CIT is a toxic influence, and because of their behavior. I'm not talking about their ideas. We can debate the ideas. I can debate Barbara Honegger's ideas. She won't debate back. But the idea is that these are, I was just seeing a note here. There's one other thing that I have a little homework project for everybody who's listening today. Go to Truth and Shadows, go to their search bar, and type in David Chandler. You'll find that I am denounced in 37 articles. That there's that Craig has written 37 articles where he, no matter what it is he's talking about, he takes a paragraph in there and denounces me and a bunch of other people typically with me. So I just think that's a little bit weird. And then some of your followers, like Eric Sandstrom, if you go on Facebook and look that, he denounces me daily or multiple times. There were over 500 denunciations from September to Christmas. I mean, what kind of a thing is going on there? And he attributes his motivation to you, Craig. So I think this is harassment and it's cyberbullying. And that's one of the terms I used in one of those things I wrote to the board. So I think I stand by what I said to the board. You are a toxic influence. And my assessment that you should be removed has nothing to do with your ideas. It has to do with your behavior. I can deal with, by the way, we've been having some discussions on Scientists for 9/11 Truth. We have a forum, and we don't have unanimity within that group, but it is absolutely refreshing to disagree with other scientists, where we can go back and forth and be rational and have a conversation about the merits of the missile versus this versus that. And it's not a kind of harangue, and it's not like you're evil because you disagree with me. That's the kind of dialogue that is needed in the truth movement, and that's what we're not finding here. And I have no need to have any time at the next meeting. I have I mean, this entire meeting is a joke. I mean, just look at yourselves, guys. The reason it took so long for the simple idea of fairness for me to just simply respond to accusations leveled against me, I think you've condemned yourselves. So I have no interest in this forum anymore. So bye. Okay.
I'd like to respond to that.
That was my response to you.
Let's not go off. This is Fran Schur. May I add a bit here?
Sure. Yes, Fran.
Yeah.
I guess you would be next in.
Yeah, Craig, what strikes me is that you have done all of this defaming of David and anyone who believes differently from you on the Pentagon by all these articles, you know, starting this craziness. And just because people believe differently than you, you want to defame them. And then you play the victim. You know, when someone objects to this defaming, then you become the victim. I just don't see that that's very constructive for the truth movement, you know? So that's my comment.
May I respond?
I'm not going to listen. I'm going.
I'll listen.
Fran's going to listen.
I'll listen. David's pretty upset about all this, and I don't blame him.
Oh.
I mean, he's put up with a lot from you all. I mean, from a lot from you, Craig. And,
has he?
I would like everyone on this call to just think, what if someone in the movement wrote 37 articles about you, defaming you, attacking your credibility, just because you have a different opinion on the Pentagon? It's different.
This is Cheryl, and I have to jump in here. We have a queue, and Fran, you weren't on it.
Cheryl. Fran would be next because she's on the same phone as David.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I think I can end there. I thank you for listening, and I just think, again, you should all look at yourself. What's going on here? It's ridiculous. This should be science. It should be true truth-seeking, which is science. And that means civil dialogue. It means looking at the evidence and discussing it, not defaming people personally. It's absolutely insane what's going on here. So that's my end. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's not 37 articles about David Chandler, okay? It's 37 articles that touched on the Pentagon at some point where he is mentioned because it's perfectly appropriate to the subject matter.
But you defame him. You defame him in this.
I do not defame him. I don't know if you know what the definition, if you've, you know, looked up the exact definition of defamation, but I have not defamed him.
Everyone on the group here has been invited by David to go do your homework. Go to Truth and Shadows. Type in David Chandler. See how you would feel. See how you would feel if someone treated you this way. And if you think that's constructive to the 9/11 truth movement, I personally don't think it is. And I'm also curious, Craig, you, in your last 37th article, you now mention me as part of this propaganda team. It's like the original CIT people who had an enemies list, and you're starting the whole charade over again. It's like,
no, I didn't. No. No. Fran, I made it very clear that does not mean that any particular person is consciously, distributing disinformation. I made it very clear that some people may have been duped into going along with this, and unfortunately, I think you're one of those people. I think you're, I'm 100% confident in your honesty. But I'm sorry. I mean, this is an effort that has gone on for more than a decade, and all David and the rest of this group ever want to talk about is the parts of the official story of the Pentagon that they agree with. Where's the research paper about the remote controlled plane or about Hani Hanju? Or not that we need that. We've heard enough about that. But all they talk about is, I mean, now you're going to have a big conference where all you're going to talk about is a plane hit the Pentagon. What is the purpose of spending years and diverting the entire movement to this question in order to establish that a certain part of the official story is true? To me, a genuine effort would be to say, look, we don't agree on whether a plane hit or didn't hit. We think they're wrong. We think a plane did hit. However, here's the other part, here's the parts that we think are wrong in the official story. That would be the appropriate way to go. But we never hear that from this group. All we hear is how great one element after another of the official story is, how accurate, how true, and all the government evidence is totally reliable and authentic. And if you want to, talk about how about you know, what's the word I'm looking for, decorum, like you know, polite treatment of people, you should be following your own partner Wayne Costi and how he behaves. Okay, I assure you, it is not pretty. Okay, so I think. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
We've got three other people in the queue.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Fran. Sherry Aspen.
This is my turn, Sherry. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I just have a three-part question. I wrote this down. Craig, have you watched Wayne's and David Chandler's entire presentation?
Oh, you want me to go? You want to answer right away?
Yes, please.
Okay, I have watched a good part of it. I have not watched all of it. I have promised on numerous occasions, whenever it comes up, that I will go through all of it and that I will write a response to it. So I have every intention of doing that. I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about 900 slides worth of material that obviously took Wayne months to produce. So, you know, he's being a bit disingenuous when he's kind of taunting me, like, oh, how come you're not ready to answer me? You don't have anything. You have no evidence. So the answer is I have not watched all of it, but I will.
Okay, and another thing is this citizen investigation team, this is the first I've heard of it. And I've kind of been in this truth movement for a long time. Is that something that's still active?
They have not really been active for about 5 years. They were very active, and they have produced a lot of material. I think something around 2007 through 2013.
Okay.
But not much since then.
Okay. And then who was it that you said? I think I wrote notes of this whole thing. Who was it? Something I think you said that said something about Barbara, that she must put in writing to apologize for her reporting and on her good research. Who said that about her, that she should have to do that?
Yeah, that was a guy named Simon Faulkner, who's joined in on the chorus to get me booted from AE. Faulkner did that on a TAP email thread, which David was also on, and which, you know, I don't know if he saw that. I can't really say he saw that for sure and didn't, but he never objected to anything that Simon wrote,
that's
to my knowledge.
That is really terrible. So I think that, yeah. I would like to hear from the others, you know, Wayne, about that and what he says about that happening, to do that to Barbara. She's been so, you know, incredible. So,
okay, sure. Can we move on?
And then I would like to know later on if those three debates that somebody that I read about that already have been done about this, mm-hmm. I would like to know if it's possible we can find those to watch.
Yeah, so. they're recorded and they are available.
Okay.
So if you write me privately,
well,
I'll send you the links. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. So Barbara Honegger is next, I believe. Oh, come on, Barbara. There you go. Oops, I accidentally erased the queue, so Barbara is next, and then Sheila Casey's after her. So you guys will have to get back in the queue. Star 6, please. Star 6. Barbara and...
Hey, so am I up now? I just heard it's my turn to speak.
Go ahead, Sheila.
Okay, I wanted to tell people about an experience I had with David Chandler, so you have an idea of why I don't trust him. He wrote to me back when I was a journalist writing for the Rock Creek Free Press, and he wanted to know what the Creek's position was on the Pentagon and whether we had a preconceived notion about it. I told him we didn't have any preconceived notion, but we were all in agreement that no large plane had hit. He then asked me if I had reviewed Jim Hoffman's presentation, where he used Google Earth to take various locations around the Pentagon and show how easy it would be to see a plane if there had been one flying over. And this is a claim of CIT that a plane flew over the Pentagon, and that's what I believe happened. So he referred me to that, and it took quite a lot of time to go through it piece by piece. And I noticed that using Google Earth, that big, important government buildings like the Pentagon stand up straight and tall, but everything else has no more substance than a coat of paint on the ground, because Google Earth is primarily satellite photography, aerial photography. So I went through it, and I saw that, yeah, using what Jim Hoffman had used, Google Earth, it made it appear, though, that you could see the Pentagon from these locations. But if you used Google Street View, which is actually a photograph from that actual location, you were not able to see the Pentagon from any of those locations. So I went through and I took screenshots showing side-by-side Street View versus Google Earth for every location that Jim Hoffman had specified, and sent all of that back to David Chandler, because this decisively proves that not only did Jim Hoffman have completely no leg to stand on in the claim he was trying to make, but he had done something that was deliberately deceptive in attempting to convince people that you could see the Pentagon from these various locations. At that point, I received no further reply from David Chandler. He simply, he said, actually, it's been a few years, so it may have been a very brief reply, something to the effect of, this doesn't interest me. He had no interest in seeing the truth, and this is not something that could in any way be open to debate. It was as clear as day that the Pentagon could not be seen from any of those locations. So I just thought that very much, that experience right there is just a microcosm of some of the experiences I've had over the past decade of dealing with these people who are continually pushing something for which they have no solid evidence. And I often have come across this kind of experience where they simply are not being honest.
Okay, thank you. And Barbara Honegger.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, good, I'm back. I guess I was dropped or something. Okay, just before this call, or maybe just as it was starting, I sent everybody an email that I've now resent with an attachment, letting you know, Craig, and everybody else, that there are two really critical, and I'm going to be brief, two really critical pieces of the history of the Chandler, Cost, Ken Jenkins, et al., Jim Hoffman, whatever, group that are not in your article, and it's probably because you're not aware of it. As you noted in your article, Craig, quote, it wasn't until seven from this clique co-authored the Honegger paper, and by the way, that's the paper that was the main author is Victoria Ashley, who, hooked up with Jim Hoffman, and after she did, Jim Hoffman started being bad on the Pentagon. The actual major author was Wyndham, as noted in the first footnote in that article. So you say, it wasn't until seven from this clique co-authored the Honegger paper that they admitted that they were in fact a group. I think this is very critical. It involves me and my work on the Pentagon. I was the senior military affairs journalist for the Pentagon's own Department of Defense, Premier Science, Technology, and National Security, Graduate Affairs Research University, for God's sake, for 16 years. My work is by the only person in the movement I know of who actually was a senior journalist for the Pentagon itself. And the basis of my work behind the smoke curtain, which this so-called Honegger paper presumes to critique, and Chandler's one of the authors, is that the basis of my paper is pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon, just like at the World Trade Center. That's the bottom line core message of behind the smoke curtain. By the way, Wayne Costa just recently put out a Facebook statement that he had seen no evidence of explosives at the Pentagon. That is absurd. Now, this is significant, as this paper, the Honegger paper, is a screed masquerading as a scientific paper against my behind the smoke curtain, which demolishes the official story of the Pentagon. All right? Second, what isn't included in Craig's article, and I'm sure he doesn't know about it, or he would have, is that the 9/11 Film Festival in Oakland, California, that he mentioned, that there was a vote by that Northern California 9/11 Truth Group that puts on that film festival on whether to include my behind the smoke curtain on pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon in the 2014 film festival. The vote at its meeting was 11 yes to 1. The 11 included Richard Gage, who was a member of that group at the time. The 1 was Ken Jenkins, who was a major member of the Chandler, Cost, Jenkins, Hoffman cabal. And Ken Jenkins further threatened the group at that meeting. I was told this by Bonnie Faulkner and others. Bonnie's on this call. She can confirm it. That he threatened that he would not facilitate the festival at all, and there wouldn't even be one if my documentary was shown that year. As the group relied upon Jenkins to do the video production for these festivals, he then unilaterally extorted the group by, quote, offering, unquote, to show it the next year in 2015 so he would have time to create and show what he called a rebuttal video. It was, he never made that video at the time of the 2015 film festival the next year. He only created slides, and those slides were presented as part of Chandler's presentation. He talked Chandler into making the presentation for him at the 2015 film festival, where they also showed my film. It is clear that the number one goal of this clique, which is a danger to the movement, is to do everything they can to divert attention and credibility from the overwhelming evidence that the Pentagon attacked itself on 9/11. Everything they are about is to divert attention from the United States military and intelligence community as the perpetrators of this horrendous event. And finally, whoever Simon Faulkner is, I don't know. He apparently published this thing on a TAP email thread on February 20th. I was in Scotland. I just got back. I have not seen it. This is the first I've learned of it. I will try to find it. But what he has claimed is absurd. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll just add real quick. I'll add real quick, Ken. I won't be more than a second. I just want to mention that I have written about the issue with Jenkins and the film festival to some degree. I didn't get. I don't know if I got into it as deeply as you have tonight, but I will point out that the Northern California group is one of the sponsors of this Pentagon conference in May. So I'm sure that that's also, I'm sure Ken Jenkins was instrumental in that. So I just throw that in.
Okay, so I have the last person in the queue is T. Biancalana.
It's Susan Clark.
Susan Clark.
Thank you.
Okay.
I was supposed to have addressed the group tonight with regard to 5G and geoengineering. I was just finishing speaking with a legislator who called me actually tonight. So I'm glad a little bit for the delay. I'm sorry for the tensions, though, in the group because I love so many people who are here and know them. So I do want to say I had a very strange experience that contributes a little bit to this. About 5 years ago, I was giving a piano lesson to a guy who said that he had formerly worked at the Pentagon and was actually sent to deliver some sort of equipment to the Marine barracks next to the Sheraton that morning before anything had noticeable had happened. And when he went to deliver this, he had to park near the building because it was apparently a heavy kind of thing. When he pulled into the parking lot, he couldn't find a spot and so had to kind of go around and around. He told me exactly where the stop signs were and everything, and I checked that later, and that all checked out. And he all of a sudden just heard this terribly loud rumbling that frightened him, even though he was a military man, to the point where he opened his car door and stepped out, and he said that he saw the underbelly of a plane, and I asked all kinds of things, what color and this and that. I asked him a lot of questions, I would add, because I didn't believe what he was saying at the time. In any case, he said that this plane came from over the Sheraton and then descended very rapidly and And then he said it went into the Pentagon. But of course, I said, well, was there smoke? Perhaps it went over. It was a flyover. It went through the smoke. And he was very insistent that he saw it go all the way in. But who knows, right? He could have been influenced by something else. But it was extraordinary. I actually did write it up at the time. What I did first was to call. I think I called David Ray Griffin and said, would you please just take this down, because I don't have any method of recording this right now, and I have to say exactly what I heard over the past hour and a half before I forget anything. And he couldn't do it, and so I called Stephen Jones, and he actually did record it, and then someone else later transcribed it. So I don't know whether that's of any use. This man also said that there were, I believe he said, five other people standing in the Sheraton parking lot watching.
Susan,
yes?
Yeah, we're really not discussing the forensics of the Pentagon right now. We're discussing this problem
of the conflict.
Right. Yes, that's all we're talking about right now.
I just thought maybe it would help the conflict in some way, but you're right. Okay, in case you hadn't heard, so the whole situation there is really what everyone has witnessed, and contradictorily is very fascinating. I very much appreciate Barbara's work, especially on the Pentagon. She's just phenomenal. So I should stop talking about that now. Is it time then to speak about 5G?
No, unfortunately, there's a guest before you. Are you able to wait?
I'm not. I'm on the East Coast, and I'm actually finishing up a huge legislative process that's due tomorrow.
One moment. Let me check with our other guest and see whether he can wait. I think we might have lost Kevin.
Kevin, are
was
you
Kevin Barrett on?
Please unmute him a minute here. Kevin?
Hello,
I'm
here.
Yeah. Kevin, I know you say you have to go by 10 o'clock, right?
The earlier the better for me, but I could wait a little longer, I suppose.
All right, thank you, then. So if that's the case, then we'll proceed with our next agenda item, which would be Susan Clark. And I'm sorry, who's going to introduce her? Were you going to introduce her, Cheryl?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, all right. So for 30 years, Susan Clark has advocated the right to environmental health, alerting officials to emergent problems such as inhalation, neurotoxicity, radio frequency, microwave radiation, bioeffects, and geoengineering. In 1994, she provided critical documents on chemical injury to Vice President Gore and effected the founding of an interagency work group linking synthetic chemicals to new diseases. This resulted in the federal government's first recognition of chemical sensitivity. In 1995, she produced the first medical conference, other than the Pentagon's, on the Gulf War syndrome, receiving in 1996 recognition from the American Association of Environmental Medicine. While a research assistant at the Harvard School of Public Health in the 1990s, she stimulated new studies and acquired a certification in health and human rights. Her 1997 public health petition broadcast the scientific community's consensus that cell phone infrastructural radiation is hazardous. Having presented to medical and epidemiology facilities and hundreds of communities, she combines rigorous science with incisive legal strategies, empowering people to defend themselves and other living beings against nuclear, chemical, biological, and electromagnetic radiation pollutants and weaponry, so as to thrive. So welcome, Susan, and you can take it away.
Thank you so much. Right, and I'll make this short because I know Kevin wants to speak, and I very much want to hear Kevin. Pardon me, but I'm going to be selfish here and speak shorter. all right. Obviously, there's a lot going on surrounding 5G, and what we really should be calling it is 4G, 5G, DAS, distributed antenna system, because the 4G system is horrific as much as the 5G is, although the 5G is what's getting all the attention. 5G irradiation involves the potential for as many as 15 new wavelengths to be added to a very dense electromagnetic ambient radiation, and of course all that radiation is also xenobiotic, foreign to life, and harmful to begin with. So when we add all of this to it, it's not merely producing additive bioeffects, but the synergistic ones. So this is multiplying and even exponentially increasing bioeffects. 5G is usually represented in many of the articles and videos and so on that you see out there as primarily involving millimeter wavelengths. That is not true. Here in the U.S., the primary system that's been built out already, 600 megahertz, is actually a wavelength of about 20 inches. That's the kind of wavelength that penetrates deeply into the human body. It's very well absorbed, easily absorbed. Its harmonics are horrific because they approximate the sizes of body parts, of organs, of the dimensions of the brain and the head. So it's very much absorbed by the human body, and even worse for children and babies because it's approximating their height can actually approach what we call resonance effects, where the body or body part literally becomes an antenna and a person feels buzzed as if they were being hit with a maser or taser or laser. So it's very important that we figure out ways to stop this, and there are all kinds of efforts going on throughout the country. We've got lots of people on Capitol Hill. We've got people in legislatures all around the country. One of the problems is most people are putting out some disinformation, as, of course, many of us have been bemoaning with regard to the 9/11 truth movement since the beginning. It's important to say that this is not just millimeter wavelengths that are horrific enough in themselves. It's centimeter wavelengths, or here in the United States we call them inch type of wavelengths, and they vary all the way from about 20 inches down to 1 inch, and then the millimeter wavelengths would be from about a half inch, or sorry, less than that, about a tenth of an inch, or all the way down to a tenth of an inch. So it's one of the reasons that they call this full spectrum dominance is they want to use very large swaths of the electromagnetic spectrum to be able to exert enormous control by way of the targeting of people, by way of using what they call voice-to-skull V2K influence, which allows that people can sort of be mind-controlled and be led to do things like Sirhan was led to do long ago, and to surveil people, obviously, in extraordinary ways. In addition to, and this is the important piece here, I mean one of the important pieces that no one knows about or few people know about, control weather. If you look in the geoengineering huge set of patents and scientific papers and so forth, you find that there are teams all over the world of scientists that are using radio frequency and microwave radiation for weather manipulation. Indeed, there's a group, for example, in Dubai that recently brought over, I think, 100 Russian scientists to create a system with a very high densification of antennas for rather precise weather control. And you may be aware that going back to the 60s, JFK talked about the ideal of controlling the weather, and LBJ talked about it as well, saying, you know, whoever controls the weather controls the world, or something to that effect. So this is something, it's an agenda that's been going ongoing since the 1940s. This is not about so-called chemtrails, although geoengineering involves a lot of solar radiation management, as they call it, SRM, and SAI, stratospheric injection of aerosols. But if you direct people, for example, to chemtrails, they'll look it up, and federal agencies call it a hoax, whereas if you look up geoengineering, you'll find out that it's in the federal budget. Indeed, the Pentagon budget itself is $5 billion per year in appropriations for geoengineering alone, and that's without the rest of the federal budget. So this is huge, and it's devastating. The kinds of things that are released in stratospheric injection include sulfuric compounds, acids, thick kinds of things that were called acid rain back in the 60s and 70s, where you had the song from the musical called Hair, and the song was called Air, written in the late 60s. Hello, sulfur dioxide, la la, carbon monoxide, the air is everywhere, right? So, so it was well understood by the general population, even in the late 60s, that sulfur dioxide was a very terrible thing to have going into your air, especially if you were to do it, you know, quite intentionally in order to block the sun. So the key here is that, again, for precise weather control, one needs, or a military needs, a very high densification of microwave antennas. So what's happening is that 5G is going out there and people are being promised fast downloads, which is crazy because they could get much faster downloads much more efficiently and with almost no energy usage from fiber optics. But they're being forced to get their fast downloads by way of wireless, which is extremely energy inefficient, wasting almost, you know, more than 99% of all of the energy that's sort of sprayed out there. And as a result, this radiation is going to really harm lots of beings. First, all the pollinators, because they all have antennae, right? With the exception of birds, who have a very high concentration of magnetite in their brains and are also, by that means, very, very badly affected by this radiation. We're seeing huge drops right now in insect populations. It's unheard of. And it has to be stopped. So if you would like to learn more about how to stop this, how we actually are working to stop this and have legislation going in the states using the 10th Amendment to override some of the horrific things that the federal government is doing, and also working at the federal level through all of our volunteer lobbyists to stop this, you can go to zerogeoengineering.com. That's Z-E-R-O, geoengineering.com. You can also go to Scientists for Wired Tech, and the 4 is just the number 4, scientist4wiredtech.com, and you'll get huge amounts of information there. And you can also contact people through those websites that could potentially connect you with me if you want to get to me. In the meantime, we have wonderful bills being introduced now in Pennsylvania and Rhode Island. We've got other bills pending about to be introduced in multiple other states that will not only regulate and in some ways prohibit geoengineering, but will also inhibit and in some cases prohibit some aspects of 5G. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Wow, Susan, that was amazingly succinct and informative. My hat's off to you for using your time so efficiently.
Because I'm selfish and I want to hear Kevin.
Well, I think we all do. And so I would ask anyone who has a comment or a question to keep it very brief in deference to Kevin. So we're still in Q&A mode, so star 6 if you want to make a quick comment or ask a quick question, okay? Star 6. Okay, Barbara?
Yeah, hi, it's Barb. I guess I'm first. Thank you so much, Susan. I've known Susan for a very long time. We have mutual close friends, and I just want to applaud what you are doing. Thank you so much.
Amen, amen. Okay, Sherry Aspen. Sherry Aspen, you have the microphone.
Oh, hi. Hi. Here I am. I had it on mute, but sorry. I wanted to thank you very much for your information and also ask you, is there a device we can put our phones in that helps protect our bodies?
Susan? Oh, Susan's muted somehow. Let's unmute her.
Yeah,
okay,
thank you.
There you go, Susan.
there are things that you can do to make your phone radiation somewhat less hazardous, and there are all sorts of devices that are out there. You can find them. The problem is this is not just about devices, right? I'm talking here about infrastructures, large infrastructures, and you can even do some things that can make that a little bit better, but ultimately you're not actually blocking the radiation unless you do some real mitigatory methods, and I actually teach people how to do mitigation in a wide variety of ways. But what happens if we allow this to go forward, lose all our insects, our wildlife, our birds, our aquatic life too, by the way, it has to be stopped. So our primary purpose, all of us, everyone on this planet at this stage, we need to, number one, love each other, and two, love each other enough that we're actually going to stop the harm as quickly as possible. It's extremely urgent that we do this.
Okay, and Bill Wilt. Bill?
Hi, this is Bill Wilt. Two things. So thanks for the presentation. Are you familiar with a book by Elena Freeland, Under an Ionized Sky?
Yes, I am.
Is that something you'd recommend us read and get involved with? It's scary as hell.
I would actually say, look, anybody can read whatever they have time to read. But if you want primary source information, I would direct you first to the websites that I mentioned earlier, because that's not only how you'll get primary source information that will be reliable information for you, but it's also how you'll find out what you need to do for yourself and how you can also help your community, your state, the world, I mean, the federal government, everything. You can plug in that way and, you know, and take care of these problems in a wide variety of ways.
Okay, and the second and last thing is, are you aware that Massachusetts has a constitutional provision that lets citizens submit legislation? It's called the right of free petition. So
yes.
I'd urge you to, you know, like, get involved with that. I submitted legislation for a new 9/11 commission hearing by the state because we lost 90 people on 9/11. But it seems to be, it's a slow path, but it's one that exists.
Right. Well, we need to do something fast, and right now we already have a bill ready for Massachusetts to be introduced. All we need is a senator or representative at the state level to do that. So if you
what I'm suggesting is I can submit it to my legislators. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
yeah, I can get that to you. If you write to zerogeoengineering.com and let them know that you're from Massachusetts and want to do this, that would be great.
Okay, I will.
All right, thank you. And Sheila Casey.
Yeah, hi, this is Sheila Casey. Thank you for that great presentation. I was just wondering if this would probably be the kind of thing that would be rolled out first in urban areas, right? So I would imagine that the danger and the damage would be less in more rural areas or more remote parts of the world, such as northern Canada or the Amazon. Hello? Does anybody hear me?
Is that your question?
Okay. Yeah, that's my question, yeah.
Right, okay. At the federal level, what they've insisted, actually, the FCC has insisted that this go absolutely everywhere, including right on and inside farmhouses. They're saying this is it. You have to. Everyone has to have this. It's a new grid. We already have an AMI grid, advanced metering infrastructure, which people call smart meters, which are very foolish meters. We already have a grid upon grid upon grid, all of which grids, of course, are making the electric grid very, very vulnerable to EMPs and other things. So it's the whole thing has to be stopped before it gets too far. Now, this said, it's expensive for these companies to put out this infrastructure very widely, and yet the commitment is to doing that. They want to have huge equipment, which they call, ironically, small cells. It's essentially a cell tower in front of every third or every fifth house, depending, you know, in the area, and having huge refrigerator-sized power supplies on every block. Every block. This is suburban, rural, and, of course, urban. So the idea is, and the intention is, that there is no place to hide from this level of targeting, surveillance, and very precise weather control.
But what about more remote parts of the world, such as, you know, places that are not really inhabited? This is just the United States doing this?
No, it's all over the world, and part of the agenda is precisely to use satellites, which of course are far, far, far away, but to reach absolutely every last square centimeter on the globe.
Even out at sea?
That's already the case, by the way, for every ship. Every ship has antennas. Every vehicle out on sea is very well tracked. And I would mention, too, that part of the geoengineering agenda is not just atmospheric. It's also undersea. And approximately every square meter on the entire ocean surface or bottom of the ocean are sonar devices that are obviously torturing aquatic life.
Oh, sounds very Orwellian and horrible. Thank you for your presentation.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Susan, thank you so much for sharing time with us and all of this really vital information. And I trust that Craig will put the website links into the minutes so that those who couldn't be here tonight will have reference to them and will be able to visit there and follow up.
Could I ask what was the I got zerogeoengineering.com, but I didn't make note of the other one that you mentioned.
That was Scientists for Wired Tech, and the four is the number four.
Scientistsforwiredtech.com.
Yeah, find dot very, com. Very good. Yeah, solid information there. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
TECH, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for waiting so patiently.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our final guest tonight, last but not least. And I just want to put in a quick plug before we do the formal introduction about the importance of False Flag Weekly News, which is Kevin's weekly show that he co-hosts with our friends Tony Hall, and other notables in the 9/11 truth movement. And I personally support that broadcast, and I urge others to support it and to listen in every Friday on theliesradio.org. I think it's vital information and a high service to the 9/11 truth movement. So let's make sure Kevin is unmuted here. I can't see him.
Kevin, you're still with us, right?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess we can hear you. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. You're going to get an introduction from Kat. Kat, we got to unmute you, and you can introduce Kevin. Okay. Go ahead, Kat.
Can I go?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yes, thank you for asking me to introduce Kevin. I'm not going to go into his bio. Everyone knows that. Instead, I'd like to highlight how Kevin has elevated truth scholarship and activism. Kevin's interviews are remarkable for the breadth and depth of the subject matters he tackles. In this age of censorship, Kevin commendably does not shy from guests whose opinions he opposes. In addition to his rigorous intellectual contributions, Kevin is a natural comic. He brings much-needed levity to difficult subjects with his quick, sharp, ad hoc wit. I produced about 6 public lectures with Kevin and can attest to his professionalism. He could easily phone in his talks on false flags or 9/11, but instead, without fail, Kevin always delivers fresh presentations that invigorate the issues with enlightening insight. We also have to pay tribute to Kevin's bravery. Few have been as outspoken and honest about Jewish perfidy as Kevin Barrett. He brilliantly reframes analysis of Zionism in creative, groundbreaking ways. For his courageous risks,
his first-rate professionalism, his hilarious humor, his innovative scholarship, and his principled stance, Kevin Barrett deserves a truther's version of the Pulitzer Prize. Let's listen now to Kevin inform us about the current situation in Iran.
Well, thank you, Kat. That's very kind of you. Of course, I'm not just interested in Jewish perfidy. My closest collaborators right now are from Jewish backgrounds, exposing all sorts of perfidy, including Jewish perfidy. Anyway, Iran right now is in the target crosshairs of the neocons. John Bolton and Mike Pompeo are leading the charge, and there is a possibility of another big war. It would be the final 9/11 war, or the final in the series of 9/11 wars. Of course, you know, it was about 7 countries in 5 years originally. They're a little behind schedule, but they're going for country number 7 and the most important of the 7, which is Iran, even as we speak. So I've been going to conferences in Iran since February 2013, about one per year. They're sponsored by an NGO called New Horizon, and it's led by Nader Talabzadeh, who's a notable filmmaker, and he's Iran's biggest talk show host. He gets 10 million plus viewers for his show regularly. So these conferences are fantastic. They have all sorts of really interesting folks from all over the world. And essentially, just about everybody that goes there is aware of 9/11 being a false flag. And once in a while, when there's somebody who isn't, they're quite shocked that the whole world knows about this. So I think this is partly why the NGO New Horizon has been targeted in a huge smear campaign over the past couple of months. We first got wind of this when Marzia Hashemi, who's the American-born lead anchor at Press TV, their news service, was grabbed, kidnapped, disappeared, whatever you want to call it, by the FBI at the airport. She was flying around the U.S. She spends a lot of time here. And then she was held for 10 days in pretty terrible circumstances that at times bordered on torture. She was never charged with a crime, but she was held as a witness to grand jury proceedings. Well, it turns out she was then released. She's back in Tehran. It turns out what this was all about was that they're going after the New Horizon NGO, which, again, is a free thinkers sort of intellectual conference kind of sponsoring outfit that is pro 9/11 truth. And they are claiming that New Horizon was somehow connected to an American former Air Force officer named Monica Witt, who has supposedly defected to Iran with American secrets. And the official story is that she kind of got introduced to Iran through the New Horizon conference that I went to in February 2013. She was indeed there, but it turns out she was not even an invited guest. She was a walk-on. She'd already been in Iran. So the official story connecting the New Horizon NGO to Monica Witt, the supposed spy, is basically a lie. She was not an official participant in that conference. I did meet her there, and I talked with her there. And just a week ago, 10 days ago, I was quoted at the top of a front-page Sunday New York Times story about meeting her. And, of course, they took the propaganda line pretty much that these were a bunch of terrible, you know, conspiracy theorist-type people at this conference. So I just published a story about this at Veterans Today and at the UNS Review, where I've started writing now regularly. And I don't know really how far in depth you guys want to get into this, but before I turn it over to Q&A, I should just say that I think part of the reason that they're going after the New Horizon NGO and they've sanctioned it, and so now it will no longer be able to do these conferences, is that at the last conference held in Mashhad, Iran, in May, a group of U.S. military and intelligence veterans and whistleblowers, including, Philip Giraldi and Scott Bennett, Michael Malouf, and others, Mike Springman, they got together and kind of spearheaded a proposal to try to convince the Iranian government to bring 9/11 truth into a U.S. federal courtroom. That was the courtroom where Iran was ordered to pay, I think it was $6 billion in 9/11 reparations on this ludicrous pretext that Iran was somehow responsible for 9/11, because a couple of the alleged hijackers had gone through Iran on their way to alleged terror camps in Afghanistan. So that court case was completely ridiculous, but Iran didn't want to even dignify it by showing up, so they never showed up. So these American veterans who were at this conference in May said, listen, Iran, you need to go and fight this thing in American court, and the 9/11 truth movement will come into court and back you up. So I sort of joined these guys and helped push this project. We had a 9/11 truth leaders letter to Iran published with a whole lot of signatures. Unfortunately, the Iranian government didn't take the advice of those of us at that New Horizon conference and the New Horizon organizers who were in favor of this. So that didn't work, but it was, you know, if that conference had been held a week earlier or a couple of weeks earlier, the Iranian government might have had time to seriously consider this and do it. This kind of activity, I think, threatens the neocons and the on-course for ramping up hostilities and maybe launching a false flag to get their war on Iran. And I think New Horizon, which is facilitating this kind of dialogue with Americans, including a lot of very high-level Americans and other people from around the world on these kinds of topics, is a threat to them. So hence this smear campaign. And so far it's been shut down through these sanctions. If I were to go to one of their conferences, I would be charged or sanctioned. And so it probably won't happen unless they're successful in appealing these sanctions. So that's my presentation. And if you want any more details, you can ask me something in the Q&A.
Hello?
Ken? Sorry, I was muted. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks very much for your succinct presentation. And we're still in Q&A mode, so if anyone would like to ask Kevin a question or make a quick comment, star 6 will get you into the queue, and we can take it from there. Barbara's first. Go ahead, Barbara.
Oh, hi, Kevin. Barb Honegger. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. Good to hear you, Barbara. How are you?
Yeah, good to hear your voice. Just got back from Scotland. Okay. I just want a clarification. The New Horizons Conference, isn't that held in Iran? And if so, how can a U.S. sanction prevent the conference from being held again? I don't understand.
Well, that's a good question. And yes, it is held in Iran. They've had about one conference per year since around 2012, and I did my first one in 2013. Now, the reason that this can stop the conference is that for one thing, the U.S. Treasury Department can sanction people and entities all over the world. So they can not only threaten to freeze my bank account and take my money if I were to go to this conference, but they can threaten to do that to anybody in the world that goes to one of these conferences. Although probably you would have to accept like a plane ticket and a hotel room from them, which people, of course, do when they go to these conferences, to be sanctionable. So yeah, they can sanction us, and then they could criminally charge us apparently as well if we're here in the United States. So yeah, I guess I could go to the next New Horizon conference if they were to have one, but I probably wouldn't be able to come home to the United States, and I haven't learned Farsi well enough to decide to do that.
Okay, so just to clarify then, what you're saying is the sanctions are against individuals who attend the conferences, but that wouldn't prevent the Iranians from holding the conference?
Well, the entity New Horizon, the NGO, is sanctioned. So anybody who engages in various kinds of transactions with it can then be sanctioned themselves. They could hold the conference, and the sanctions probably wouldn't really hurt them. But anybody who attended the conference and was in a country where the U.S. Treasury Department can actually mess with your bank account might have a problem.
I understand. Thanks for the clarification.
Okay. David Roldy. David Roldy.
Hello, I'm David Rold. Thank you for speaking to us, Kevin. So my question is about Marcia Hashemi. I've watched a couple interviews with her since she was released, and she talks about how she was treated when she was arrested and in detention, but she doesn't go into the grand jury stuff. So I was wondering, did they actually put Marcia Hashemi in front of a grand jury, and do we know what they asked her, and did she refuse to answer, or what happened? Thanks.
Well, I don't have the details, and it's possible that she's not even supposed to reveal the details. I think that's the case. But from what I've heard through, you know, the grapevine, I think she did testify multiple times to the grand jury, and that the New Horizon NGO was the focus of the questioning. And that's really all I know.
Okay, so you heard about that, and that's why you're connecting her?
I heard a rumor, but I didn't get that straight from the horse's mouth. I just heard I think Nader might have said that in the TV program I participated in with him.
Okay, it's just your presentation, you connected her detention with what you're talking about New Horizon. So that's who they're going after. They're not like trying to shut down Press TV or something. So
no, they haven't sanctioned Press TV or anything like that. And her interrogation was focused on New Horizon.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sherry Aspen, I think.
I'm curious to know if a note that David Icke of Britain was denied his visa was pulled on his recent trip to Australia. Is that just spurious information on the web, or is that actually something that happened?
No, that's a real story, and that's another example of how I think the various folks in the high levels of power here are panicking about the way that these alternative interpretations of things have become so widespread and popular. So there's this huge pushback right now against alternative media and free speech on these subversive topics.
Right. Okay. Thanks. Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Okay. And Bonnie Faulkner.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, hi, Bonnie. Good to hear you.
You're not going to have an answer to this, but I'd like your opinion. We have been, everybody and their brother has been predicting that the United States is going to attack Iran for like 10, 15 years. Every time I go to an event, somebody's saying, oh, we're going to attack Iran, and it never happens. Do you have an opinion as to whether or not it would be different this time? Do you think that it's actually a real possibility that they're going to do such a thing? I mean, in the past, it's always been sort of considered that they can't do it. They couldn't pull it off. What do you think?
Well, that's a very good question, Bonnie. I think they've tried to pull it off. Well, we know at least once there was a plan in, I believe it was 2006. This was getting towards the end of the Bush-Cheney regime. And there was a plan to stage an attack on a U.S. naval vessel off Bahrain and blame this on Bahrainis, Shias, allied with Iran. And we know about this because the whistleblower, Gwyneth Todd, who was the top advisor to the admiral in charge of the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, blew the whistle on it. She went to her State Department colleagues and got it stopped and almost paid with her life, apparently. She fled for her life from Bahrain, and she's been living in seclusion, if not complete hiding, in the outback in Australia ever since. So that was very close to actually happening. As for whether it could happen today, militarily, most sensible strategists would say that U.S. attacking Iran is just too risky and likely to backfire, a really stupid move. You know, Obama's foreign policy motto was don't do stupid shit. And that was like the number one example. But now we've got, you know, Trump is an idiot. He doesn't really, you know, he thinks that Obama negotiated a bad deal with Iran, and he, Trump, is a genius who could do better, but he doesn't know any of the rule. He doesn't know any of the details about it. So he's using his usual strategy, which is to come in with all guns blazing, and then, you know, put maximum pressure on the negotiating target, and then, you know, cut some kind of deal. So he's using Bolton and Pompeo as these rabid attack dogs to try to terrorize the Iranians into submission, imagining that he'll somehow get some kind of better deal than the JCPOA nuclear agreement. But that's not going to happen for various reasons. there is no better deal to be had. Iran gave up its right under international law to enrich uranium and so on and so forth. So there's really no way to modify that deal meaningfully. So the whole thing is kind of it's a non-starter. But Trump has put these rabid dogs in there, Bolton and Pompeo, who really do want war with Iran. And they're working with folks like Sheldon Adelson and Bibi Netanyahu, both of whom have been very upfront about their, let's attack Iran as soon as we can, let's just do it. And in fact, Netanyahu ordered an attack, and his big Israeli attack on Iran that might have drawn in the U.S., and his own military people refused to do it. So I think it's quite possible, because the problem is, well, according to this recent story published by well-connected ex-Intel insider Gordon Duff at Veterans Today, according to that story, Trump's been told he has no choice. And it probably would be Bolton, Pompeo, Adelson, and the neocons, who have a lot of clout with Trump through Kushner, through various financial dealings, and probably through Jeffrey Epstein's dirty pictures. So, yeah, I think it's possible that they'll actually do it this time. And if they do, it'll be a humanitarian disaster. It'll be a disaster for the U.S. strategically. It might be a much bigger disaster strategically for the U.S. than for Iran. And it could, of course, escalate into World War III. Probably wouldn't, but you never know. So it's a totally disastrous enterprise, really, from pretty much all the perspectives. But that doesn't mean it won't happen.
Kevin, could I ask you a second part to that question?
Sure.
What is your assessment of people who claim that secretly Iran is actually allied with Israel and that they cut deals? What do you think of that opinion?
Well, you know, they have cut deals, of course, as Barbara knows very well, after the Islamic Revolution, when the U.S. and Europe sicked Saddam Hussein on Iran, and they fought that war during the 1980s, parts of the Iranian leadership cut deals with Israel and the U.S. in the famous Iran-Contra scandal.
Right.
And so there are, of course, people in Iran who will sometimes cut deals to further their own interests or what they see as their national interests. But I think that overall it's absolutely clear that Israel and Iran are at loggerheads, because Iran officially supports the Palestinian resistance, not just officially, but, you know, provides massive moral and material support for the Palestinian resistance, and nobody does anymore. You know, 9/11 was about making sure that people like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi wouldn't be able to keep supporting the Palestinian resistance, and they aren't anymore. There's only one country now and its regional allies who are supporting the Palestinian resistance, and that's Iran. And there's only one country whose official leadership is in line with the majority popular opinion in the Middle East, which is that Israel is not a legitimate state and that the settler colonialists must go home sooner or later, and that's Iran. So Iran is an existential threat to Israel, not because of its military prowess, although it is supporting a resistance that just has to endure to ultimately someday win, but because of its moral stance, which reflects the will of the people of that region. And so for that reason, Israel and especially the extremist Likudniks around Netanyahu have been just, you know, drooling to try to trick the U.S. into going to war with Iran for, well, since 9/11, and that was one of the reasons they did 9/11.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, let's see who's next. Sheila Gacy.
Yeah, hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, okay, how are you, Sheila?
I'm good. Just to look at the big picture here, I'm wondering what, you know, when I look at our world, I feel so little hope sometimes. I see that we have more and more censorship. You know, many people with YouTube channels have been demonetized. Many people with blogs have had their blogs taken down unexpectedly. That happened to Craig. There's so many ways in which we seem to have this ever-tightening grip of totalitarianism and fascism kind of encroaching on us. At the same time, I see, you know, that people waking up to the truth of what our world really is also a one-way door. You know, people, no one becomes an ex-truther. More and more people are waking up every day. And but I guess my question to you is, well, how do you see things kind of going into the future, say, 10, 20, 30 years from now? Do you think that there's hope for an awakening that could sort of throw off these shackles that are oppressing us? Or, I mean, I'm just really asking you, because you're dealing with these kinds of things every day in a way that I can't anymore, of sort of how you're taking the pulse of the awakening force versus the shutting down force, and who do you think is going to win?
That's a big question. Yeah, there this wave of censorship that's been picking up steam for the past couple of years is a real credit to the alternative media and to truth tellers. It means that, you know, we're causing, you know, so much trouble, for they're so worried about us that they have to go to these extraordinary lengths to try to shut us up. As far as what that bodes for the future, I don't know. I mean, in Islam we say Allahu Alim, you know, only God knows. So I don't really pretend I can see what's coming down, but it sure seems. I don't know. I'm not at all happy about the technological explosion around us, with the likelihood of, you know, AI, the singularity coming upon us, when humans will be redundant and probably exterminated by their machines. If, of course, you know, 5G doesn't kill us by then. So I'm not too optimistic, really, given that. But there's, you know, it's still great to see the human spirit, you know, standing up and saying, you know, we're not going to accept lies. We're going to, you know, we're going to look for the truth, try and behave honorably. And maybe somehow that will prevail. You know, in crisis, people can actually sometimes surprise you with how well they behave. When I was in the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco, I remember that there was, you know, the power was out for 3 days in a big urban center. And I'd actually been sort of in the thick of some Rodney King riots. And so I thought, wow, you know, this town's might get torn down. But there was little fighting, violence, crime. People just kind of pulled together after that earthquake. And so, you know, maybe at some point after it gets worse, it'll get better. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay,
and
great.
Let's see who's next. Sherry Aspen. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi, this is Sherry in San Diego. I've been taking notes. And you said about New Horizons being an NGO. First of all, I don't even know what an NGO is, if you could tell me that. And who is New Horizon, and why would they close your bank account if you went to that conference?
Well, New Horizon, okay, it's an NGO, non-governmental organization.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's a sort of, you know, intellectual exchange. You know, their mission, they're like a nonprofit whose purpose is to facilitate intellectual exchange among free thinkers and activists from around the world. They focus more on Western countries, but there are people at these conferences from all over the place. I got to meet Alexander Dugin, the very influential Russian philosopher, and some people call him Putin's brain, at the last conference. So then why would a conference that's, or a nonprofit that sponsors intellectual conferences get sanctioned? And the official reason from Mnuchin, the neocons' Treasury Department, is that it's trolling for spies, that they're inviting people to their conferences, hoping they can turn them into Iranian spies. But the only evidence they have for that is this bogus story about Monica Witt from 2013. And there's not a single other example that they can offer of any such thing ever happening. Hundreds and hundreds of people, intellectual leaders of various kinds, have been at these conferences. And as far as we know, none of them even have any secrets, much less are likely to become Iranian spies. But anyway, that's the official rationale. So they've called it, I forget what they've labeled it precisely, but it is officially a sanctioned organization, just like, you know, terror organizations like Hamas or Hezbollah. So just like I can't accept a ticket from Hezbollah to go speak at one of their conferences in Lebanon, I can no longer accept a ticket from New Horizon to go to Iran.
And then one more question. Do you agree? This is what I believe. I believe that on 9/11/01, our country was taken over, that it was a coup. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's, you know, a coup is defined as the seizure of power by a faction of the power structure against another faction. And yes, it was a coup by the neoconservative Zionist extremists allied with Netanyahu and his cabal.
And therefore, this is a puppet government by definition, and we can't trust not one policy or not one person in it, correct?
Well, remember, a coup is one faction against other factions, and the neocons have somehow grabbed a lot of permanent power. You know, you would think after the Iraq debacle that they would be laughingstocks and chased out of town. But no, they're still right in the thick of things. So yeah, I guess in a sense that coup was permanent, but there's been a lot of pushback against the neocons from within the power structure. You know, Brzezinski was not on board with the Iraq invasion and much less any plans to attack Iran. Brzezinski saw that this stuff was not in the U.S. national interest. It was in Israel's supposed interests, according to the Likudnik version. So there are a lot of folks in the government and in the services and so on that don't agree with the neocon policies. Whether you can trust anybody, I don't know. It's just always you should trust but verify, I guess. I mean, listen to what people say.
But we have to agree that
okay,
all
Sherry,
of
those... Sherry, yeah. We have to move on, okay? I'll give other people a chance. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So let's see who else is... Susan Clark. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, thank you. Kevin, you are probably aware of the accusation... by Iran, or at least by Iran, an Iranian general, Gholam Reza Jalali, the head of Iran's civil defense organization, that he says that Israel has been taking the lead in suspicious climate change in the country, and specifically that Tel Aviv, along with, he says, some allies, are actually stopping precipitation in Iran. He says foreign interference is suspected to have played a role in this. He said joint teams from Israel and one of the neighboring countries make the clouds entering into Iran barren. Moreover, we're faced with cases of cloud theft and snow theft. Now, I happen to know from my background that that's entirely possible. Of course, some people ridiculed him for saying that. But it looks like that's been going on, according to Iran, for about 4 years now, leaving them with no water, no snow on the mountains where all the surrounding countries have snow. So could this be, a subtle way of Israel attacking Iran for these 4 years?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is happening. And they also attacked Syria. Most people don't realize that to the extent there was actually an uprising in Syria, it was due to the terrible economy in the rural areas where they needed the rain that didn't come. There was drought for years and years in Syria that was very likely induced by weather warfare. I interviewed the author of Weather Warfare, the late Jerry Smith, on my radio show, and I've looked into this a little bit. I also spoke with someone in Iran who said that he was an engineer who was working to counter this. So Yeah, he said he was at the time I spoke to him, he was optimistic. He thought they were going to be able to counter it. But he said that countries in the region were sort of fighting for rainfall. I don't remember him saying that it was Israel that was depriving Iran of rain quite that directly. But he said that that regional countries are using weather modification to try to optimize their own rainfall, to squeeze the moisture out over where they need it rather than over somebody else's country. So, yeah, I definitely think I'm sure that's happening. I mean, there's we need some real investigative journalism to prove it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's widely reported all over the major media, all over the world, actually, that he said this. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Susan. And Kat, you're last. Go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. It's Kat. Yeah, so what's up with the Iranian foreign minister withdrawing or resigning and then withdrawing his resignation, kind of reminiscent of when the Lebanese Prime Minister Hariri did the same thing. He resigned and then he withdrew his resignation. I mean, what's up with all that?
Well, with Hariri, that was a different situation because he was kidnapped by bin Salman in Saudi Arabia and probably tortured. So he was basically forced to resign at gunpoint by the Saudis, who kidnapped him when he was visiting Saudi Arabia. So once he was free, of course, he rescinded that forced resignation. But Zarif of Iran may have resigned. Well, he's in political hot water because he is the face of the JCPOA nuclear agreement, which everybody in Iran now sees was a complete joke. You know, the hardliners who were opposed to Zarif and Rouhani, and they call themselves principalists, not hardliners. That's the American media term for them is hardliners. But what they're really called is the principalist, people who stand on principle, whereas the other side is the pragmatic reformists, the people who are willing to compromise. And anyway, Zarif is the face of the JCPOA, which is a total disaster for Iran. They never should have signed it. They never should have trusted the United States. So he's in a tough political situation. And it may be that, the official story is that he was miffed that President Assad of Syria, in his first visit to Iran since the Syrian uprising and so on began, met with the supreme leader of Iran, and I think with Rouhani, but not with Zarif. Zarif was not the foreign minister. He was not invited to that meeting. So the official story is he was miffed about that, but it probably goes a lot deeper and has to do with the fact that Iran basically, you know, bent over backwards to try to placate the hostile West and signed that JCPOA and was planning to reestablish good relations, and it's all been blown up by Trump and his neocons.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, Kevin, for your patience and taking the time to let us get through our stuff tonight and giving us this update, which is pretty important. But again, I want to remind everybody to tune in Fridays, every Friday, to get False Flag Weekly News. You can't be without it, okay? So that brings us to our last item on the agenda tonight. Let me end our Q&A session here. If anybody has any extremely important that they can share very quickly, this is the time. So just go ahead and make your announcement and make it quick, please. Who has an announcement?
I do, Barb.
Barb?
Shall I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. I just first off wanted to alert everybody. I'll send the link. There's a very, very important article yesterday or the day before that was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, of all places. And you may or may not have seen it. The title is Marine Recruits Learn an Important Lesson at Boot Camp, What Happened on 9/11, if you can imagine. It's an article about the Marine 17-year-old recruits
for the first time are arriving who weren't even born on 9/11, and they're being told the official story of 9/11 to hype them up for going over to Afghanistan. I will send that link. The problem is the link that I send you, I'm not able myself, because it's the Wall Street Journal, you have to subscribe to read the whole thing. I've gone to Google to try to get the whole text to send you. I'm not able to. So maybe if somebody can get the whole text of it, I've tried, and resend it to everybody on the 9/11 telecon list. I'd appreciate it. But I will send you the link to what I'm able to find. So I just wanted to alert everybody to that. It's really horrible. I don't know what to do about it, but maybe on the next call we can discuss that. It's very serious. The announcement simply is that the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry is moving forward on, if they haven't already, I just came back from Scotland. The Lawyers Committee has voted, our board that I'm on, has voted to submit an extremely important document, which is called the Persons for with Material Information Supplement to the World Trade Center 9/11 Petition. That, of course, is already with the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York in Lower Manhattan. And that was supposed to have been done 2 days ago on Monday. I'm not sure it has been, but if not, it will be imminently. And as soon as it is submitted, you will be reading about it on the Lawyers Committee website, which is lcfor911.org. That's lcfor911.org. So do go there, check it, and it's very, very important. The Lawyers Committee has also recently at a recent board meeting, approved another major project that I'm not at liberty to talk about yet, but it is major. And hopefully I'll be able to talk about it on the next call. So if anybody has any questions, you can ask.
No, we don't have time for that. So any other announcements? Any other announcements?
I just want to say something to Craig.
No, please. Announcements. Announcements.
Oh, announcements. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, if anybody has any important announcements, this is the time for it. Otherwise, we need to conclude, because we've been on this call way too long already. So
I do think we need to determine who's going to be the moderator from now on.
Okay. You can do that. I'm going to leave the call, but you guys are free to do that. I'll leave the conference open. But I would like to conclude our business then for this evening and my moderation. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, bye.
Thank you, Ken. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Cheryl, do you want to lead us in this?
Yeah. My thoughts are that I'd like to talk to Ken and see if I can get him to change his mind, but I don't know if that'll work, because I think he does this better than anyone I could imagine, but... and I know it was a tough call tonight, so yeah, he kind of had it. But if anyone else has any other ideas, that's my thought on it. Anyone?
I was just going to say, Cheryl, since I'm sort of peripherally involved, I think that's a good first step, what you're suggesting. I would like to see if we can see if we can talk to him as well. I mean, I'm not sure what beyond that. You know, somebody would have to, you know, express a willingness to do it, and then we'd have to kind of go from there. So I'm not sure how easily it is to do that on this call right now.
Yeah, I think maybe if he really doesn't want to do it, then maybe we could have a special call sometime before next month where we figure that out. And
yeah.
What about you doing it, Cheryl?
Well, let's see if
I mean, you're already, you know, sort of part of the moderating process.
Yeah, but you know, Ken does a lot with you know, the recording of it and making.
Yeah,
it
but if he didn't want to do it, meaning.
Yes, if he didn't want to do it, I will definitely think about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there are other parts of Ken's duties that are not just moderating the call. They're, you know, producing the text for the. If I'm not mistaken, Cheryl, he still writes the text for the agenda kind of preview there. So that's another, you know, there's a certain amount of effort that would have to go into replacing that with somebody.
So does it sound okay to everyone that if we try and get him to change his mind, and then if he doesn't, then we could have a call sometime between now and the next meeting to see where to go for people who are interested in that? Does that
I'm personally would be happy to see Ken go, because although I realize that I'm not one who has to do the work either, but I have felt for a long time that he has not been fair to me, and that he is not impartial, and I think there should be greater impartiality in running a group like this.
Okay. Anyone else have a thought on that?
Well, this is Barb. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I agree that Ken is not objective. However, I think he's a good moderator. So I have mixed feelings. I'm fine with trying to get him to reconsider. I doubt that he will. So I'm hoping that you would be willing to take it over.
Okay, so if anyone has any other comments, or if you want to email Craig and I with your comments about what you think or suggestions for other people, or that would be helpful, and then we'll get back to you on the next step and whatever Ken says, if we can talk him into it or not. Or
I guess his reasoning has to do with the vote to allow me back on the call. Was that it?
Yes. He didn't like the fact that he was overruled by the group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I also think it was a very difficult call, and I think he was probably anticipating that and was feeling stressed. So it just all kind of came together for him. But
Unfortunately, that, you know, reacting that way can end up creating a lot of additional tension, you know.
Right. True.
So.
You mean reacting by bouncing me off?
Reacting, I think, a bit emotionally and, you know, and getting exasperated and sighing when somebody would not understand something and. You know, I don't think that was helpful. I know, but anyway, I think we all have our better days.
This is Wilt signing off. Good night, folks.
Good night, Bill.
Bill.
So we'll just keep you all posted then, unless anyone else has any other suggestions. It's kind of late, so what do you all think?
Okay, thank you thanks for all you do.
Okay.
Oh, what about next time? We usually discuss that.
I have two speakers lined up for next time. Miko Peled is going to be on, discussing Israeli politics and kind of what's going on there. And then we have Jason Burmis, who's going to be on talking about the dark overlords who have these 9/11 documents. He's been kind of following that more than anyone else that I've seen, so he's going to be telling us about them and their documents. Are you all familiar with that, the Dark Overlord thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason was on 9/11 Free Fall with Andy Steele about that subject. So if anybody wanted a little background, you know, there would be. But, yeah, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, for a month ahead of time, those two sort of significant guests is, you know, it's probably all we need right now, right?
Right, I think that's all we need because, you know, if we don't, we always go over like this. But, you know, if we have any other, Barbara, you had mentioned something, we should talk about the Marine recruits learning about 9/11. So, you know, we can add that on if you want to have that there. But other than that, I think we're set. So,
I'd like to propose just for...
What's that?
Well, I didn't mean it as a whole agenda item.
Okay.
Okay. I was just going to say that it you know, doesn't have to be next month, but I think an interesting guest would be Dominic DiMaggio, who is a researcher who has done a lot of work on the Shanksville part of 9/11. He went down there on his own and interviewed a bunch of people, and he's got some really interesting. He spent a good like an hour with the coroner and looked at a whole bunch of photographs of the alleged crash scene. Anyway, I think he would be a very worthwhile guest, but it doesn't, you know, it's not time sensitive, so it doesn't have to be next month. It could be April.
Yeah, let's try and get him for April. And do you have his contact information? Well, we can.
Yeah, I'm in touch with him. Yes.
Okay.
Who is he speaking?
Yeah,
that's Vita? Craig speaking.
Okay, hi, Craig.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
Oh. Craig, I have a question. Quick question.
Sure.
It's my understanding from your and either your and or David Chandler's presentations, I believe yours, that that the Scientists for 9/11 Truth website is now linked from the A&E website. Is that correct? And if so, that's very, very disturbing, because what that means is the whole Coffey, Chandler, you know, Ken Jenkins cabal is linked to the A&E website. So is that correct?
When you say linked to the A&E, you mean that they have an AE link on the site?
No, I mean, does the A&E website, did I understand correctly that A&E's website has a link to the scientist's website?
Right, I get you. Actually, it's now a moot point because AE did a revamping of their site, and they no longer have a list of links to other sites. So it kind of so my link's gone, their link's gone, everybody's link is gone. So.
Oh, all right, I understand. Well, just for the record, Richard Gage expressed great consternation to me by the pressure put on him by David Chandler.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, because I feel that way for him.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, well, I just want to say something to Craig. What? Craig, I admire your patience with this. You know, hang in there. I'm Nita.
Thank you, Nita.
As
you actually have no idea.
As a former journalist, I think you're doing a really good journalistic job. I read your article, and I thought it was very good. And I wanted to write a comment, but I couldn't get it to take.
Oh, well, we'll figure that out. But I just want to say, you have no idea how good it is to hear that, how much appreciated it is to hear that kind of thing.
As a journalist, I just, your patience is just amazing.
My stress level was through the roof tonight, so I it's nice to have something sort of nice sort of at the end of it all.
Listening to that bullshit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Okay,
time to call it a night or more comments. I guess we call it a night then. Thank you, everyone.
I guess.
Okay.
Okay, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Craig, can you hang on for a minute?
Yep.
Okay, I had to just kick off Michael Cook. I hope he doesn't know I did that. The record